Tonight on The Download, political reporters Mitch Dumke and Ben Jarofsky, Monteverde owner chef Sarah Gruenberg, and another installment of Character Flaws. Now here's your host, a man who has also withdrawn from tomorrow's GOP debate, Justin Kaufman.
You can't keep me down. You'll see how your ratings are when I'm not in that debate. I love how that's been the biggest flip-flop is not flip-flopping. That's the Donald Trump way of, at first it was Megyn Kelly, now it's, these networks just want all the money. And then the third is, if I go to the debate, then I'm a flip-flopper. I love it. It's so good. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We got a great show, so let's get right to the business today. The state of the state called for more government restructuring and long-term solutions. Even the word compromise was thrown around. We'll talk with State Rep Ron Sandak and State Senator Kwame Raoul about Governor Rauner's speech. Also, Mike Fouché is going to join us to talk about the big news out of CPS, where the bond issue failed today, as they say was, quote-unquote, put off. That's not good. What's behind this? Is the state takeover talk of Bruce Rauner? Or may had to do with the huge interest rate that was scaring away investors? We'll talk with Mike coming up here after 7:30. And tonight, my guests at the big table are two of Chicago's preeminent political reporters, the Chicago Sun-Times' Mick Dumke and the Chicago Reader's Ben Jarofsky. They've recently expanded beyond the page as they get together monthly to get up on stage and talk politics. We'll talk to them about their show and the latest news from both the state and the city. That'll be a great conversation coming up at 8 o'clock. Later in the program, we switch gears. We're going to talk food. We got a great guest tonight. Chef Sarah Gruenberg has gone from the kitchen at Spiaggia to the runner-up on Top Chef to opening her own restaurant in the West Loop. We're going to talk about that journey tonight after 9 o'clock. And tonight, we bring you another episode of Character Flaws. This is our late-night Wednesday offering of the best sketch, improv, and performance here from around the Chicago area. Tonight, we'll meet a disgruntled engineer, try again with hockey commentary, and of course, we'll take your calls and spew out love advice punctuated by light rock, because that's what we love about Chicago radio, right? Nothing says Chicago radio like sad stories and Gloria Estefan. We'll get to that tonight after 10 o'clock. That's all tonight. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. And, of course, production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago, starring those who live here. All right, let's get to it. Let's start the night with the carryout. Of course, this is the nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Governor Rauner delivered his State of the State at the Rotunda in Springfield, and according to Chicago Tribune's Eric Zorn, had a 62% folksy rating because the governor knows how much we hate saying full words. It's like he's afraid we're going to be offended. Hey, he just pronounced a G. Sally, get in here. Well, la-di-da. You want some Grey Poupon with that, governor? Illinoisans, we shorten our words. Get him. We all pitchfork down Main Street in Springfield. Governor Rauner spent most of his speech talking long-term about how he wants to make the state of Illinois a competitive place for business and for state government to be more structured and more efficient. So let's be clear. Words like competitive and restructuring, they're code words. Restructuring means bankruptcy so that we can be competitive, which is a code word for tearing up existing union contracts and offering the workers less money. It's pretty simple, and it's a glimpse into how corporate America works. As a taxpayer, I'm actually glad that state workers get paid middle-class wages. If that's thanks to a union contract, then good on the union. The reason Democrats push back is because the worry is that someone making 70 grand now will be forced to be making 30 grand. Now, I'd be angry if my taxpayer money was going to bloated salaries if my garbage man or my state worker was getting paid like 400 grand. I get that. That's sort of CEO level, which I kind of get the feeling is who Governor Rauner's talking to. So let me get this straight. We want a governor that forces people to take thousands of dollars less to save the state, yet we won't collect proper tax on CEOs, on big business. I know, I sound liberal. I get it, but I'm trying to be objective.
I mean, you find that weird, right? I find it weird. And I keep hearing pundits say that the state of Illinois sent Rauner to Springfield to do this, to not compromise, to break the system. Really? At 51% over Pat Quinn, whose campaign slogan was, hey, I know I suck, but at least I tried. Now watch me mow my lawn with this hand lawnmower in my yellow polo. Oh, so sweaty. I hate to say it, but a really cute dog could have beat Pat Quinn. And to be fair in this equation, the Democrats should be sweating too. They've been in power in the state for a long time. In the last 12 years, one-party rule. To be fair, they've done a pretty good job at representing their constituency, which seems to be Democratic lawmakers. So Democrats should be the first one to compromise. They should be the first one to restructure. Imagine sucking for 12 years at something. It's like playing baseball all throughout childhood and never hitting one ball, just striking out every time. And then saying, how dare you put me on the bench? I'm a contact hitter. Instead, all we get is a pissing contest, and it's not even state fair season. Anyway, that's my takeaway for the first part of the state. To be honest, I missed the final moments because Kanye West and Wiz Khalifa were beefing on Twitter. And that's way more interesting than Rauner Madigan, right? Just for the emojis alone. All right, and weather, it's nice today, right? It's nice. Feels like it's April, but without all the Easter candy. It's supposed to get to 50 degrees this weekend. And just when I put away my hypercolor half shirt. In sports today, we celebrate the 30th anniversary and one day since the 85 Bears won the Super Bowl. Woo-hoo! Can't wait for tomorrow's anniversary. In other football news, the Bears are not raising ticket prices for next year because, well, 6-10. Finally, a just world. In baseball, USA Today says the Cubs have the best rotation in baseball and the Sox have the sixth best in baseball. No word on any new moves, but looks like the Sox have interest in adding Dexter Fowler. Oh, that would be great. Fowler was huge for the Cubs last year. Love to keep him in Chicago. In basketball, no word on whether Derrick Rose will play against the Lakers on Thursday. Rose injured his hamstring or leg or knee or something on Monday night. At this point, it feels like Derrick Rose is just one big hamstring. Boing. Ow. And finally tonight, someone stole $70,000 worth of cheese off a Wisconsin truck. This news gave the 10-year-old jokesters across America's middle schools a fresh take on nacho cheese. Giggles aplenty. Well, that's the carryout for January 27, 2016. If you want extra sauce, I'm just going to give you extra sauce. It's going to cost you. It's expensive. There's sour cream in it. Coming up, we're going to talk REACT to the State of the States. Representative Sandak will be on. Talk with State Senator Kwame Raoul. Mike Fouché will be here. And then, of course, Mick Dumpke and Ben Jarofsky at 8 o'clock. It is a great 2 hours of radio here in Chicago and a big political day. It's The Download from WGN. Stay with us. Cochran show's killing it lately. It's one of the best shows in radio, if not the best.
It is.
The Patrick Kane this week. Yeah. They're going to be out in Naperville tomorrow. That's Friday. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow night, Andre Darlis is going to be on with us.
I know. It's amazing.
How great is that?
Star power in here.
She's going to talk about the Iowa caucuses because she's going with the show with Cochran next week and Ro Khan. Pretty much everybody but us. Or going to Iowa to broadcast live from the caucus. I think that's great. So we'll talk to Andrea about her work. You can also see, which I thought was brilliant, Steve's State of the State speech himself that's on WGNradio.com.
Yep.
That's great. Andrea will be on. We'll talk about what to expect from the caucus. And you know, I'm excited. I don't know much about the Iowa caucus except for the fact that I'm completely enamored with the idea that you can sway somebody in person to come stand by you, and that counts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I were running for president, let's say you were running and I was your guy, I'd be like, Pete's great. Come over here with us. Come on. Come over here with us. Pete's great. Pete's got a dog. Come over here. You like dogs. I love that it's so primitive, yet it's so right. You know, like in a certain way, that is what politics is, just about convincing and trying to get somebody to come over to your side. Come on. Come on. Hey, come on. Come here.
Why do they make such a big deal, as when Chris and Dave were on earlier in the week, they were talking about it, and they said that it's not even a good predictor of who's going to get the eventual nomination.
Yeah, I wonder why, because, again, it's just trying to sway people over to the I think that at a certain point there's probably more complicated politics in different primaries that yeah, it's interesting because the Republicans don't do it that way. The Republicans do it straight ballot, same style in Iowa. So it'll be, you know, you punch a ballot, you tally the ballots. The caucus is really the sort of caucus idea is only for the Democrats, which did choose Barack Obama last time around. So it'll be interesting to see if, you know, back in 2008. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Hillary and Bernie Sanders. But there's a lot. I mean, it's just the beginning. And I'm excited because we've decided here that we're going to do results.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, no one really asked us, but we're going to do it anyway. So Chris and Dave from Touche will be here from 8 to 10. And we'll get Andre on the line and talk to our WGN family that's in Iowa. And then we'll also see, you know what, we'll get our representatives and people that have a vested interest here in the state of Illinois in the winners and losers on. We'll just do an election special. That's exciting.
That's great.
I know. We got to get one of those Portillo chocolate cakes in here. They're everywhere, dude.
National Cake Day. That's what happens.
I've seen four of them in my travels today. Chocolate cakes. It's a lot of chocolate cake.
We can get one from Portillo's.
I don't want one. I'm just saying I've seen a lot of them. You know, I'm not a big cake guy. I'm not gonna be lying to you.
I'm a pie guy.
I'm a pie guy.
Yeah.
I'm a cherry pie kind of guy.
Oh, cherry.
Yeah. I'll go with a boysenberry.
Yes. It's one of your lesser known berries, isn't it?
Yeah. Boysen? Maybe that's what I like. It's exotic.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an exotic pie kind of guy. All right, coming up, we're going to get reaction from today's State of the State speech from Governor Rauner. Joining us will be Representative Ron Sandak, also State Senator Kwame Raoul. Mike Fouché from AlderTrack will be here. And then coming up at 8 o'clock, Mick Dumke and Ben Jarofsky. Give us the real deal, the real state of our state. If you follow those guys, investigative reporters, political reporters in Chicago, the best. Have these guys will tell us what the real deal is. The one story I want to talk with them about is amazing. We'll talk about it with them. But the Mark Conkle story today about police officers deliberately breaking.
Hiding.
And hiding breaking, the audio in the cameras in the cars.
Great story.
That's a must read on DNA Info with Mark Conkle. Amazing. So that's coming up. We'll talk with Ben and Mick about that and everything else under the sun coming up here at 8 o'clock. It's a download. Stay with us. Rob, I feel like you should be you'd be a good guy for the caucuses. Like, you'd be a good guy to be there, like, being, come on, come over by us.
Yeah.
Let me hear your pitch for Pete's running for president.
Pete?
Yeah.
Look,
and I'm not sure where I want to go.
Pete is
corner.
For no. Listen to me. Pete is for this country's children. He has sworn off sugar. He will not eat any more sugar, as stated on this very show, on this very radio station, just weeks ago. Mm. Sugar is out. That's why Pete is for your children. Vote for Pete.
And do you some head nods like, come over by me?
Right.
Come over. Come here.
It's got to be very commanding.
Come over. Yeah, it was very commanding.
Yeah.
All right.
A vote for Pete is a vote for your kids and veterans, too. because if you don't invoke kids or veterans, you might as well just get out of the political game.
I would, if I were the guy, the Iowa caucus, like Barker, I would accidentally drop money on the ground. Can you do that? Like, oh, God, look at how much money we have over here. Look at this. And then see if it helps. Oh,
we're gonna putt for a prize. Let's see.
Exactly.
Sorry, you missed the Rice-A-Roni. You could have gotten closer.
I think we're making it more carnival than caucus. It's good, though.
Well, it has that atmosphere.
It does.
It is fun. Next year, here we go. Next go-around, we should be up there.
I think we should just invent the Illinois caucus. For any we should just do a new caucus. Unofficial.
For this circus side show in this state?
Just for any election, every November, there should be something in September that's the Illinois caucus, unofficial. We just do it.
Right.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Big day for Illinois politics. The state of the state. Here we go.
This is
the state of the state of the state.
Yep.
State.
It feels good.
Mike Fouché from AlderTrack.com joins me every Wednesday to talk Chicago and Illinois politics. Today, a big day. Everyone dressed up. And what was your reaction to the speech that was at noon today?
Well, I didn't get to see the outfits. but, you know, I mean, what was interesting was that there was a lot of talk in the pre-release, all the messaging that was coming up before the speech, which was that Governor Rauner was going to be all about bipartisanship and that he was all about kumbaya, holding hands, we're all going to be great mm-hmm. together. But, you know, really the speech in a lot of ways was him doubling down on the Rauner turnaround agenda. I have a copy of the speech right here, and there's a whole page of him bashing AFSCME, the big government mm-hmm. workers union, saying how terrible they are. And a lot of talk about moving additional power to localities, which essentially he's saying is that he wants to, if I'm reading it correctly, move home rule to individual governments so that they can raise their own sales taxes and income taxes and they don't have to do property taxes anymore, which has been a long time no-go, and that's basically what the state is able to do, and local governments have to rely on property taxes.
But the main thrust of this is that, you know, the big sort of overarching is that, you know, his goal continues to be cemented in a long-term solution to the problems that the state government have, and that includes just the way that it runs, the structure right. of it, everything. He was right. brought in by the taxpayers and by the elected. He was elected to do this.
And his theory that he posits, in order to be academic here, is that he believes that a lot of it is rooted in the union organizations that are in the state. And a lot of the things that he talks about, besides saying how horrible AFSCME is, is that he talks about how there needs to be more local control and that governments need to have more ability to bargain or in order to set their own terms without having to go through collective bargaining. He talks about how there needs to be, he does talk about there needs to be term limits, which, you know, is interesting. Term limits comes up again and again and again now and then. He talks a lot about how state employee compensation needs to be linked to performance rather than seniority, which I think a lot of people aren't going to disagree with. However, his larger plan that he has had in other places has been largely just to eliminate collective bargaining entirely. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think this, I don't want to make a judgment on whether or not unions are the right thing. But it is a political statement in order to say that you can't have unions or that unions are not the right thing. And it isn't necessarily a statement about whether or not government is functioning.
Well, this has been to be fair, Governor Rauner has been very consistent in this message. A big part of the turnaround agenda has been about collective bargaining, about the unions
Absolutely.
And the way the contracts are structured
Absolutely.
Are holding us back, making us less competitive.
Yep.
So I mean, he's doubling down in that regard
yep.
of continuing the
yep.
same rhetoric that he's been talking about for this first
if
year.
If anything,
in office.
He is on point. But the issue that has been up to this point is that the Democratic Party and the Democratic leadership has said, no way. No go. We're not going to do anything about that.
Let me ask you, I thought he did a good job, and, you know, because there, you know, it's been a tough year in Springfield, and we're going to talk with Representative Sandak coming up here in just a moment. You know, just in terms of getting things done and what we're used to as taxpayers, as people in the state of Illinois, we're used to, oh, this got done, this got done, this got done. This
right.
year's been a lot of a waiting game as we sort
right.
of try to figure it out. Did he do a good job of putting the blame on the other party?
Yeah. He tells his story, and you know, if you listen to the applause, you know, it was clearly there was one side of the room that was applauding versus another, and I think that he isn't necessarily telling a convincing story that people are buying in beyond his initial constituency. He really didn't give a speech that tells a story about why it is that his turnaround agenda is the one that's going to save everybody.
Well, that's Mike Fouché from AlderTrack.com. Let's bring in Representative Ron Sandak. He's a Republican that represents the 81st District, which includes western suburbs like Downers Grove. Representative Sandak, good to talk to you again.
Hey, Justin. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Shout out to the DG.
there you go.
Let's talk. I mean, you had a statement right after the speech, and give us your reaction to the governor's speech today.
Well, I think I have a little different take than Mike, because I thought it was clear and unmistakable that an olive branch was offered. Now, it was offered in the form of conciliatory language and support for President Cullerton's pension model, pension reform model, and for some other reform initiatives that the governor's office has had pretty good time and accessibility with John Cullerton's office. Mm-hmm. You know, and what I found was interesting in Mike's analysis is, yes, he's been consistent in message. He's been consistent in message because before he got to Springfield, for 12 years, we had one-party rule, and we have, you know, some pretty fundamental problems with the state and the city of Chicago, and he's offering a different path. And I want to be clear, guys, and obviously Mike's got the, you know, anyone can read the words the governor uses. I think the word balance was used three or four times with trying to reset some of the aspects of governing in Illinois. I don't think he bashes AFSCME. I think he does confront them with some facts about Illinois and what we pay our state workers. We pay them the highest wage, and in fact, in some instances, state employees doing a job that would be classified in the private sector are being paid 30% more.
Yeah,
and I don't think he says fire him. I think he says, hey, maybe we got to slow down on some races.
And AFSCME was quick to point out that, you know, that here we go with sort of, they said that was fiction, and they had their own stats and their own statements they put out. But I want to ask you about compromise. You know, this was a big part of this speech, and yes, everyone's paying attention to that word. Are you optimistic as a representative, a Republican representative, that the Democratic Party is listening and is willing to compromise?
Well, I mean, Justin, the 800-pound gorilla that was not, you know, and again, Mike can show you the speech that wasn't said was, is Mike Madigan ready to compromise? That's the question. The governor, to a certain extent, has been negotiating against himself in many respects and continues to try and offer ideas. Now, maybe these ideas are anathema to Democrats. Okay, then where's your plan? And think of the irony of that. They control the legislature. They have supermajorities in both assemblies, and yet they don't have a plan for CPS. They don't have a plan for a budget. They just say the turnaround agenda is terrible, it's horrible, it's hurting middle-class people. By the way, how has middle-class people done over the last 8 years in Illinois under completely Democratic rule?
That was a big part
wages
of
wages are too. Down.
Yeah. So, Representative, by the way, I love that word anathema. That's awesome. That's a great word. And
thank you.
But what I really kind of am wondering here is, though, is beyond the righteousness of either side, because, you know, you talk to people in both groups and they're like, I'm the one who's right. I've got the right views. I've got the right facts. At some point, aren't we just in a big game of chicken? I mean, aren't we colliding at this point? When does somebody have to say, I give up? Or, you know, at some point does somebody say, well, here's the thing that's completely different, and now we're going to go in a different direction? It didn't seem to me that Governor Rauner's speech did any of that.
Well, remember, here's the difference between Bruce Rauner and Michael Madigan. Bruce Rauner was elected by the entire state. So he represents downstate interests, rural interests, agricultural interests, and city and suburban interests. Mike Madigan doesn't. However, he has the power in the aggregate to control the House. You know, people say, you know, when they come to the People's House, the House of Representatives, it's really Madigan's house, and it's Madigan's rules. So, yes, there is a game of brinksmanship being played. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your perspective, only one of those gentlemen is responsible to the larger electorate. So giving up or just saying, hey, I was elected to succumb and not change. I mean, Bruce Rauner was elected to change the trajectory of our state. By any definition, by any objective analysis of where Illinois was and is, we have a myriad of problems.
So, doing the same thing over and over again
is just not smart.
So your theory that you're positing is that Governor Rauner was elected, and therefore that was the statement that people in Illinois want, and so the legislature should just say, okay, cool,
no,
let's follow
your lead. Not necessarily, Justin. Not necessarily.
That's Mike, but yeah, come on.
Justin would never say that.
I love radio. I'm not saying that. I am saying that he represents the state statewide, and that there was a change component associated with his election. And I think he is, and I think there's an objective record about instances where he has tried to go and meet halfway. And I think President Cullerton recently has taken up the challenge. Mike Madigan hasn't moved one iota on one issue, not one. Hmm. And so, you know, if we're going to compromise, someone's got to actually take a step out and at least look like they're interested in trying to cut a deal. And there's some low-hanging fruit that can be accomplished, but for reasons I can't fathom, I assume they're political in nature. It just hasn't happened, and it's frustrating. I'm sure you can hear some exasperation in my voice because I don't think anyone wants us to be in this condition.
Well, this is going to be a big couple months here for the for Springfield, for state politics, for getting some work done. Representative Ron Sandak, we got to have you back. You represent the 81st district, which includes the western suburbs like Downers Grove. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right, coming up, we're going to talk with State Senator Kwame Raoul from Chicago, Democrat, get his take on reaction from Bruce Rauner. State of the State today, State of the State speech. It's Download. Stay with us. It's a Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Mike Fouché. He's here every Wednesday night. We're talking State of the State.
The State.
The State. Joining us now on the line, State Senator Kwame Raoul, a Democrat that represents the 13th District, which parts of Chicago, including Hyde Park. Senator Raoul, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
So it must have been great being name-checked in the speech tonight, or today. I was like, all right, well, what do you make of that?
Well, I mean, you know, early on, before he even became governor, after his election, I had a conversation with Governor Rauner, and I told him, one of the things that was low-hanging fruit that I think we could work on a bipartisan manner was criminal justice reform. Mm-hmm. I think he took heed to that, and I think shortly after he got appointed, he used an executive order, and he created the Criminal Justice Reform Committee, and he found a great person to head it up in Roger Heaton, who used to be the U.S. attorney for the Central District of Illinois, and we've done some good work on a bipartisan basis, and we've made some initial recommendations to the General Assembly, and we'll have others coming forth. Hmm. And so I think that's one of the areas that we could sort of highlight as to just kind of
something that got done or something that's going well.
You know, Senator,
the only thing that was that got done this year.
Well, Senator Rubble, a lot of people don't know this, but I think that the prisons are the second or third largest spend in the state budget after social service payments, right? It's a major part. So to say you're going to reduce prison population by 25%, that's potentially a major, major savings for the state.
Right, and in addition to the kind of mathematical figure there, it's also the policy, the just kind of ongoing policy that will prevent us from overpopulating our prisons on just kind of reflexive, politically convenient, tough on crime policy. Mm-hmm. And there have been conservative voices nationally that have realized over time that that doesn't make sense, doesn't make fiscal sense, and doesn't make good policy sense. And so it's one of the areas where we could have consensus on a bipartisan and bicameral basis. And it's good to highlight that, and I'm happy he did. However, you know, kind of the underfunding of some of the elements that will make that successful leads us to believe it's kind of like talking out of both sides of the mouth.
Right. You know, let me ask you, because there was a lot, and we just had Representative Sandak talk to, you know, his interpretation of the speech today was that Governor Rauner was giving an olive branch, that he was giving, you know, saying, come to the middle, Democratic Party, come to the middle, Speaker Madigan and Senate President Cullerton. Let's do business. And Representative Sandak said, the ball's in your court. As a senator, a high-ranking senator in the state senate, what do you say? I mean, are you guys ready to compromise?
I think Representative Sandak's middle has changed from when I knew him when he was in the Senate, you know, and when Dan Prof was challenging him. Governor Rauner just gave a couple of million dollars to Dan Prof to sort of keep Republicans in check. Representative Sandek has been on the receiving end of that, and in terms of being threatened in a primary historically. And so his middle has changed. So middle is defined on the basis of what the initial demand is. What I heard loud and clear from the governor's speech is it's time to cast partisanship and ideology aside. What
right.
the governor has done has used ideology to hijack the budgeting process. And so what I mean by that is things that are not directly related to budget have been used to hijack the budgeting process. He talked about the value of higher education. At the same time, he's been assaulting higher education. We've got folks, Republican families and Democrat families, who rely on MAP funding to keep their kids in college. And he rightfully said that accessing higher education is critical to our economy. Yet, at the same time, he's been assaulting higher education.
So, but Senator, I mean, I want to ask you the same thing that I asked Representative Sandek, which is, doesn't it seem like, regardless of the facts that you have, and both sides have their own facts, and both sides have their own viewpoints in which, you know, their righteousness and who is right, aren't we just sort of in a big giant game of chicken at this point? I mean, when do we actually have somebody say, well, okay, fine, you can have your thing, and then I get to have my thing, and then a deal gets cut. Is that politics?
Certainly, but it depends on what the thing is, the things you're talking about. If they're budget-related, certainly. If it's something that, you know, I have my ideological agenda, and I'm going to use my power to say, I have to have these things, meet me halfway. Well, halfway is defined by what your initial demand is.
Well, isn't budget ideology?
It's not budget-related things. If budget-related things are included in the meet me halfway, it doesn't make sense to meet you halfway. You know, if I say I want to negotiate with you on the price of chairs as long as you talk to me about cups. You know, the cups have nothing to do.
Wow,
with
that's
chairs.
Deep.
You know, I mean, I'm just reaching for just a comparative analogy, but I hope you kind of understand what I'm saying. You know, year after year, and we've had, you know, don't listen to me as a Democrat. We've had former Republican governors say, no, you got to negotiate the budget. You can still have your ideology, and you can still work on those elements.
Well,
absolutely. I'm one. 4 years ago, I worked on a bipartisan a workers' compensation reform bill. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy to face the folks who usually support Democrats and step to the table and do workers' comp reform, a workers' comp reform that Governor Rauner's workers' comp chair has said is saving the state money and will continue to save the state money. You know, it wasn't easy for me. I knew it was something that was necessary. A few years ago, I worked on bipartisan pension reform. It was found unconstitutional,
right.
but though it wasn't popular for me within my party to do, I worked on it.
Senator Raul, pro cup.
State Senator, this is going to be a big, big time for Springfield, and we hope to have you back to talk about trying to get this budget done here in the winter spring session that will be coming up here. State Senator Kwame Raoul is a Democrat that represents the 13th district in the state Senate, which parts of Chicago, including Hyde Park. Senator Raoul, good to have you.
Thank you.
All right, Michael, what do you say to that? I mean, here you go. That's the reaction to it. Last words, real quick.
It's chicken time. I think we're going to be in this
chicken
for a while.
Dinner, huh?
Yeah, it's chicken for dinner.
But I mean, when I said it to Sandek and to Raul, like, all right, well, here comes it's crunch time. The state of the state is done. I don't know if there's a budget address without a budget, but you know, do you see in this next 3 months something getting done?
I think that nothing is going to happen until a very broad base of people across Illinois are feeling serious pain. That's what I
Yikes.
Think.
Yikes. Mike Fouché. We didn't even talk about the CPS bond stuff. We'll talk about it again soon.
Yeah.
Mike Fouché from AlderTrack.com. It's a subscription newsletter. It covers all things Chicago and Illinois politics. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
It's The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 9 o'clock, we're going to talk with Sarah Gruenberg, chef over at Monteverde on Madison Street. It's really one of the best new restaurants Chicago has going right now in 2016. She was the executive chef at Spiaggia, and she did Top Chef. She was a runner-up, and now she's got her own restaurant, so we'll talk to her about that journey coming up. And at 10 o'clock, Character Flaws. It's our Wednesday night special where we take the best of sketch, improv, performance, bring it to the radio. Jimmy Corain is on tonight. That'll be fun. And we're going to do our classic bit, Nightwind, because what's better than getting love advice from a light rock DJ? And that's kind of a Chicago tradition, right?
Work for me.
All right. Pubs and taverns have always been the place to get good political conversation. It's kind of a no-brainer to take that conversation, add in some of the actual politicians and professional observers, and put it on stage in the back. That's the idea between First Tuesdays with Mick and Ben, which is a political talk show on stage the first Tuesday of every month at the Hideout in Chicago. The next one will be Tuesday, February 2nd, and it features State Representative LaShawn Ford and Chicago Alderman Roderick Sawyer. Mick Dumke is an investigative reporter for the Sun-Times. Ben Jarofsky, columnist for the Chicago Reader. Both of them in studio tonight with me at the big table. Gentlemen, good to see you.
Likewise, Justin.
So let's talk about this. I mean, when did you guys come up with the idea? Mick, you and I talked a little bit about this show, so maybe I'll throw it to Ben. You know, where'd you come up with the idea to do a political talk show, which is really just a conversation in the back?
When was it? It was like 3 years ago or something. We've been doing the show since
the years all start to bleed together after a while.
I believe Rom was the mayor. It was after
which
Daly.
I wish Daly was the mayor.
Tim, who runs the Hideout, suggested
Tim Tutton,
T squared, as we so fondly call him, suggested that we do this show. And so that our first show, I think, was April 2014. It took like 3 months for us to get it together. So we're heading into our second year. It's been pretty good.
You guys have been guests on talk shows.
We're almost finishing our second year, Ben. We're going to be soon heading our third year.
Just kind of got an Abbott and Costello thing kind of going
on.
Yeah,
exactly.
He usually corrects me.
I was going to say.
You know, I edited Ben for years. Yeah. Yeah. So I can't resist, apparently to edit him while we're talking here. Sorry,
corrected many of my misspellings.
What do you guys consider the strength of the show? Is it your chemistry? I mean, the two of you on stage, or is it the guests? What is it about the first Tuesday at Mick and Ben that you think works?
Well, you can see there's a long list.
Wait, that implies that something is working.
I would like to think that. We talk about serious issues, but in a fairly informal setting in an informal way. So we try to get people loose. Ben and I are usually at least nursing a beer up there. We encourage our guests to do the same. Yeah. And just to kind of, you know, have a free-flowing conversation. So we tell everybody, of course, this is all on the record. There are actually human beings here listening to you. We tape it. But we also want them to go beyond the talking points they're used to giving in interviews and actually tell us what's really going on.
Do they? I mean, do the politicians you've had Karen Lewis and you've had all sorts of people down the line, do they buy into the idea that this is more than just sort of like the next stop on their political talk show circuit?
Yeah, I like to think they do. I think there's something about Mick was getting at the element of the environment and loosens people up. Some people stick to their talking points. We had Steve Brown on, who is Mike Madigan's press secretary. He's been his press secretary for years, and he was very good at sticking to his talking points. We couldn't wedge him from them over an hour.
That's what he gets paid to do.
Yeah, even when he was talking about his love of the St. Louis Cardinals, he was still on his talking points. He was at least fun about it, right?
But yeah, he had a good sense of humor about it.
Because it ended up being 3-1. We had Natasha Karecki,
right.
Reporter, columnist for Politico.
Hey, what is this? Am I the only guy? But sometimes, like Karen Lewis has been our guest twice, and she's great. She just really loosens up and goes after people. Who else have written?
I think Karen Lewis referred to Governor Rauner as a sociopath on our show before she said that to someone else. So in some cases, I guess I was going to say, in some cases, they test out their talking.
Legalization of marijuana. So, you know.
I mean, you guys have obviously going after the big names to be on your show. Are there some that just have ignored you or said, absolutely no way in hell am I going to be on with Mick and Ben?
Well, we're still waiting for the mayor to respond to our open invitation to come on the show. So if he or his staff people are listening to this, and I'm sure they are, Justin,
no,
as
they
we
do.
Know
it's
that they're
appointment listening.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're, you know, we still would like to have the mayor on our show. We're not going to drop other guests. We already have arranged for the mayor, to be clear.
No, one time we had this guy, I remember this, I'll leave his name out. He had a few to drink, so we were after the show. It's like the after party, you know, that's where all the good stuff happens. And so he was like, you know, I could get the mayor here, but you got to be really loose about it. You know, you got to just, like, hold it open. And I'm like, no, I'm not holding it open,
yeah,
dude,
that never
for
works,
the mayor.
Man.
If he wants to come in like anybody else. And, you know, when
we're
you
also
say,
not going to give him like a 10-minute segment. If he wants to come on, it's an hour show. He's going to be up there for an hour like everybody
else.
He's
never going to do it. Let's just like, but, you know, he's just not going to do it. So let's just like, pretend that he is, that he's thinking about it. But, you know, it's not just, quote unquote, big names. I find like some of our best shows have been aldermen that we all know. Anybody who's into politics knows, but maybe they're not known throughout the world. Like we had the. One time we had Danny Solis and Rick Munoz, which two aldermen from the Southwest side.
Whose families actually are from the same part of
Mexico
but
right.
Through their entire political careers, they've basically been rivals where, you know, Danny has been a real insider, you know, first to the previous mayor, now to this mayor. And Rick has, you know, most of the time sort of put himself as part of the progressive opposition. So to have them up there sort of going back and forth a little bit about their different takes was, it ended up being a great conversation.
I mean, it's a great thing. I mean, that to have real political conversations in a city that just loves politics, it's a great thing. Who would be the one guest you'd want to have on? And Ben, you better say Mayor Daley. You better say
Mayor Daley.
You better.
I think Mayor. I would Mayor Daley on that show, and I would be discussing TIFs and the like issues that are 5 or 4 years old, like they failed Olympics. I'd like to have. Well, this is kind of wonky, but I'd like to have. Would love to have like Karen Lewis up there with Arne Duncan.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
right?
I think that would be a good debate on where we're going in education. I'm sort of a school guy. That's my big issue that drives me. So that's a realistic show that may possibly happen someday, perhaps, because Arne Duncan's back in town, if both parties would be interested. I would like something like that. What about you, Mick?
Chapo Guzman, he's extradited to Chicago to stand trial.
I'm sure there
for trafficking drugs. We'll make a little arrangement.
We got ties.
It's closed circuit, man. It's closed circuit. It'll all work out. Mick Dumpke and Ben Jarofsky, the two behind First Tuesdays with Mick and Ben, which is a show every first Tuesday of the month. This one's going to be on February 2nd at the Hideout, 1354 West Waubonsia. When we come back, I've kind of been touting this as sort of the real state of the state. Let's talk about some of the stuff that happened today in Springfield, and also talk about schools and police and Rahm Emanuel. There's a lot to talk about, so let's get to the break. It's a download on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guests at the big table tonight, Mick Dumpke and Ben Jarofsky. Ben, a columnist for The Reader. Mick, an investigative reporter with the Sun-Times. I got a show at the Hideout the first Tuesday with Mick and Ben. It's this Tuesday, February 2nd. And let's, you know, today the state of the state. Let's get your opinion. What did you think of the performance today?
Well, I actually watched it. Which is amazing.
You won't get that time back.
Yeah, I lost. That was at 40 minutes. I don't know. I found it depressing, and I found it kind of absurd on one level. The only funny element, I suppose, was watching. I don't know if you saw it. You had to see this to really understand it. But Rauner's speaking at the mic, and behind him on the riser, so to speak, are the Senate President Cullerton and House Speaker Madigan, with whom he's supposed to be negotiating, but of course he's not, so there's no budget, and you know they're having to lay off social service workers throughout the state, and the aged, the infirmed can't get basic services. It's like a retreat of civilization, and so the only funny thing was sort of like watching Madigan and Cullerton sort of chit chat from time to time and roll their eyes in disbelief or laugh at the various state reps who were clapping when Rauner would say, you know, whatever talking point. So, I found it, I mean, I, you know, it's like a wasted year, Nothing happened in terms of.
It's amazing to think that it's been. I mean,
a full year.
A full year. I mean, and we had Senator Raul on. He was talking about his criminal justice bill and reform. And I'm like, is that the only thing, like body cameras that got through Springfield this year? It didn't seem like anything happened. I mean, budget held it all up.
Yeah.
What'd you think, Mick? What'd you think of just the overall tenor today?
Well, I thought it was like warmed over oatmeal from yesterday's breakfast. I mean, you know, the governor had and his people had, you know, quote unquote, leaked part of his message ahead of time. And the Sun-Times and other papers, you know, were writing about how he was going to make this big bipartisan pitch, this pitch for working together. But it was the same message he's had all along. I mean, if you like the governor, you give him credit for consistency. But, you know, it's a bunch of malarkey that it was bipartisanship. It was his same old turnaround agenda kind of repackaged all over again, right? I mean, was there anything different? One thing I thought was humorous is a neighbor of mine called me this afternoon and after the speech and said, I heard the governor talking a lot about raising taxes. And he said, well, why not a tax on grapes, too? You know, I mean, the governor, which is a lame joke, except that it's not quite as lame as the governor, like pronouncing working and raising the way he does. It's just so phony. It's just like, who is this guy? What is he really going for? So I just, Justin, thought it was the same thing all over again.
You guys have been political reporters and columnists in Chicago for a long time. You've seen, I mean, you both were really critical of Pat Quinn and Blagojevich before that, the one-party rule. So, I mean, where are we? I mean, is this a better government than we had, say, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when Pat Quinn was up on stage going, we're going to have to raise the income tax? I mean, where are we? I can't get a grasp of if it's working.
Well, it's clearly not working in the sense of providing basic service for people who are most vulnerable. I mean, and so in that way, we're not better. The best argument you can make, which is not an argument I would make, is that, God, I feel bizarre even trying to make this argument. I don't even know why I'm going to make this argument. But the notion is that if you start from the assumption that all the ills in Illinois stem from the fact that workers have collective bargaining rights.
Right.
And that if we eradicate those rights once and for all, then all will be good in the state. Then this is a holy mission that Governor Rauner is on, and he should not back down, even if every last elderly person has been kicked out of every single nursing home in the state of Illinois. Since I don't subscribe to that notion, and I would think that many of the Republicans who are voting with him don't subscribe to that notion, but they're too afraid to break from him because he now controls the Republican Party in this state. If you don't subscribe to the notion, then I think it's clear that our state has regressed.
What do you think, Mick? I'm amazed at I mean, the LSSI stuff, you know, really threw me for a loop, just the idea of that would be shuttered, or that would be what they're now calling restructured.
Lutheran service.
Just because, you know, there's no budget. And you know, a texter, you know, text in just in the last hour saying, isn't it against the law? Doesn't the Constitution say you have to have a budget? And it just seems like nobody even cares about the rules. And I hate to sound like Lebowski, but it's like, am I the only one who cares about the rules? Like, what's happening here?
What do you think about the Eagles, Justin?
Yeah,
I think you're right. I mean, first of all, a large portion of the state is being funded by court order. So basically, the courts have taken over some of the administrative functions of the state. That's where we are. And so the people who are hurting the most from all of this are the people who are sort of least visible to the powers that be. And, you know, one of the interesting things, of course, the governor made a pitch for criminal justice reform, which is a bipartisan issue in this state as well as around the country. And, you know, I'm tempted to applaud him for that, except, you know, as I and other people have written about, some of the people who need help, the people coming out of prison, for instance, you know, all those resources are being dried up through all this, too.
The Lutheran Family Services, that was a big reentry was a big program.
Exactly.
And they're just not funded.
Substance abuse counseling, you know, anger management, all sorts of job training programs for the vulnerable, including people who are trying to stay straight. So, no, it's you know, it's a slow moving catastrophe on that level. But Ben's right. You know, the governor and true believers say, well, what we needed to do was to send a message that the old way of doing business is over and this is the way they're doing it.
Now, is it safe? And I always have a problem with this, but is it safe to just, I mean, what they're really saying when they say the word competitive and when they say restructuring is to get rid of collective bargaining. So like corporate America, they can say someone who's making, I don't know, $65,000 a year, now you're making 35. Deal with it. Is that really what this is about? Like they're going to save money by taking away the union right to make a livable wage?
Well, that's what I presume this is, right? I mean, I don't know how else it would translate. I mean, the governor today in his speech, I mean, some of the things he says are so fantastical. So, and I'm hard on Rahm. I mean, I spend most of my time ripping Rahm. And so every now and then I have to look at Governor Rahm.
Take a little break from
that. Take a break from Rahm. It makes me appreciate Rahm more. I don't think Rahm has ever said anything quite like this. Well, yes, he has. As soon as I said that out of my mouth, I realized he does it all the time. But Rahm was arguing that if we take away collective bargaining rights of teachers, for instance, that will give the boards of education throughout the state the freedom and liberty to get their budgets in order and give teacher raises. And that's just such a preposterous notion right there. I mean, the idea that if the teachers
they
give up their leverage
that. Yeah, right.
Of that they hold
the board's
going to
be
board,
like, you guys are great.
You're great.
You
here,
20%.
Take some more money. Yeah. Would you please? So it's just a ludicrous point. And
that's why unions are there in the first place.
Yes.
Right? Well, and they're also claiming that basically by making the state, quote unquote, more competitive, that more, as he calls them, job creators, more employers will come in here. They'll create more jobs. Everyone will have more money to spend. That will improve the tax base of local communities and allow them to hire more teachers, presumably at a higher wage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's Reaganomics all over again. It's a different version of Reaganomics.
Mick Dumke, Ben Jarofsky, my guests tonight, their show, the first Tuesdays with Mick and Ben. It's the first Tuesdays of every month at the Hideout. Their next one is February 2nd. Mick Dumke with the Sun-Times, Ben Jarofsky with the Reader. Let's take a break for the news when we come back. Favorite topic, Rahm?
Yeah,
we'll do Rahm.
Of course.
We'll do Rahm.
We can't leave him out.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Patty Vasquez is on at 11. She's still in Springfield, Pete? I think she is, yeah. She went down to Springfield as State of the State, so she'll have her show live from Springfield at 11 o'clock. Right now, we are joined by Ben Jarofsky and Mick Dumke. The show, First Tuesdays with Mick and Ben, is a political talk show on stage every first Tuesday of every month at the Hideout in Chicago. There's one coming up here Tuesday, February 2nd. Ben is a columnist at The Reader. Mick, a investigative reporter with the Sun-Times. They're in studio with me at the big table tonight. Let's talk Rahm. I'm fascinated by, Mick, you know, actually, Ben, the column you did, which one of the best columns in the history of Chicago media, where you went down to the South Shore Cultural Center talked to Daley.
Oh, okay.
You know, like that, because you were kind of known as his thorn in his side, like you were just, both of you. I mean, Mick, the gun up the butt. That was you. You guys are just like, you guys are like known as Chicago's sort of thorn in the political side. Is it the same with Rahm Emanuel? I mean, does Rahm Emanuel recognize you guys and just like, oh, I hate when you guys are here. I hate when you know, like what's your relationship like with Rahm Emanuel and the administration?
Well, I have no relationship with Rahm Emanuel or pretty much anybody in his administration, and I haven't seen Rahm Emanuel since 2002, I want to say.
Really?
He was running for Congress at the time.
Right.
And I did a profile of him. And I've had maybe one brief interview with him when he was first running for mayor, which I wrote about. It's actually pretty funny, the whole thing. I won't go into it.
You should tell that story very quickly.
Well, all right. All right, very quickly.
Always the editor, Mick. You know, I love it.
Always the editor. But put that in, would you?
Put it in.
Sometimes I read it, go, wait, he put it in, he didn't even tell me. At the time, the issue I was addressing was whether we need a tough man to be the mayor. You know, that was sort of like Chicago is so wild. We need someone who could just knock us around a little bit and tell us to shut up and that kind of thing. So I was contrasting Rahm Emanuel to Miguel de Valle, who was running against him, who's a very nice man. If you ever met him, if you're on your show, you would know. Yeah. And so at the time, Rahm was known for having a quote along the lines of he was talking to one of his aides at the White House, and he had said to the aide, I believe it was, take the tampon out and man it up. And Carol Moseley Braun, this is like great moments in Chicago politics, at a debate, a mayoral debate, had said, raised that quote to Rahm, and in the debate and said, you know, that that was disrespectful to women. And so what do you say about it? And Rahm, foolishly, this is an impulse I've noticed, he does a lot. His first instinct is to deny something that everybody knows is true. Like, for instance, he said he didn't see the Laquan McDonald right. tape. Of course, everybody knows he saw it immediately. Right. And so he said, no, I didn't say that. So they called me, and they told me I was going to get 5 minutes with Rahm. That's it, 5 minutes with Rahm. They go, what questions are you going to ask? So not only are they limiting me to 5 minutes, but they want to know what questions. And so I said, well, the first question I want to ask him is whether or not he did, in fact, say, to take the tampon out and man it up. And they go, you cannot ask that question. They're like telling me I can't ask the question. So, of course, I want to ask the question. And in fact, I unfortunately did not get an opportunity to ask the question because he hung up on me in the conversation. He got so mad at me. So it's been all downhill ever since, Justin.
Mick, what's your relationship like with the Emanuel administration?
Well, it's not much different with Rahm himself than Ben's is. I don't go to a lot of press conferences, so I don't have a lot of personal interaction with him, although I was told by one of his aides one time that he demanded to know who that guy was after I did ask him a question, which was apparently off the script at one point. That was early on. But my main relationship now is through his various spokespeople and his FOIA officers, who, of course, all love me because I send in FOIAs all the time.
This is the Freedom of Information Act. This
Freedom
of
Information
the new tool
Act.
For,
yeah.
So reporters to be able to get at information that's that they're trying to hide.
Right, and it's supposed
that's
to be
the textbook.
Yeah, it's supposed to be actually the whole public. Anybody can send in a FOIA, actually, but reporters use it a lot. And we try to use it as leverage, even when we don't get the information we need. Sometimes you write about what you don't get and how they're handling your FOIAs and all that. So, but, you know, my relationship with them, Justin, is such that several of the FOIAs that I've issued since the Laquan McDonald video was released were either denied or delayed, and then the information was subsequently given to someone else in other media.
Yeah. I've heard this a lot about how this administration specifically likes to pit journalists against each other. They have favorites, or they say, we're going to give it to him, almost in a way to make the other journalist angry or what have you. What do you think of the way that politicians pit journalists against each other?
Well, I think, first of all, I admit that it's not the politician's responsibility to make sure we're covering all of the news we should cover. That's our job, not theirs. But no, they don't play fair. And in this instance, I actually think there are two layers to this. First of all, it's state law that you're supposed to respond to FOIA requests and provide these records. So, you know, they're actually ignoring, in a lot of instances, they're actually defying the law. Okay. I know that's a finer point around here.
No,
But the other thing is, in an instance, in an environment like this where you have Rahm bending over backwards, making apologies on every corner, going on forgiveness tours, taking pictures with people at soul food restaurants and at police stations. Yeah. And promising to improve transparency. And then meanwhile, he's quietly like basically having his people screw over one media person today, you know, and helping somebody else out and then doing the reverse thing tomorrow. He's just playing games.
Well, the one thing that came out this week that was interesting was, I guess it was last week, was the text messages. Mm-hmm. There was a story that came out about, I think the Tribune got the text messages. They put the PDF up. You got to see the text around Laquan McDonald and subsequent after, with the shooting around Christmas time. It's amazing because, you know, again, like you just said about Rahm Emanuel, his first thing is tonight. He said right away after Laquan, I don't text.
Yeah.
I don't text. And then you can see all
these
texts.
And as a matter of fact, I have that in writing, by the way, too, because I FOIA'd text messages related to Laquan McDonald and was denied. And then was able to read about some of his text messages related to Laquan McDonald in the Tribune. Mm-hmm. So, that's an example of, him doing one thing. And they parse very closely. And not to get into total wonk land here, but, I think they basically told me they had no text messages because the implication was because Rahm has a private cell phone. Mm-hmm. And so that's not city property. So he can send text messages to whomever he wants. But even if the people he's texting them to are paid by you and I and other taxpayers of Chicago. And so that they mince and play all these games.
Well, see, I give Mick credit for opening this frontier. Back when he was at the Reader, he got the idea of of filing a Freedom of Information request for Rahm's calendar so we could see who Rahm was meeting with. And actually, you started that
with Daly
and then carried it
and
over.
And Daly wouldn't give it, I ended up suing Daly and the city, and they eventually coughed up the record. So there was a little bit of precedent. And so, yeah, we keep asking
What that illustrated, really, it was like a cry of frustration on our part, because it was clear we didn't believe, speaking for myself, I didn't believe what the mayor was saying, like whatever the mayor would say or offer as a way of policy justification or even what the policy was. So to try to understand what was really going on, reporters, I give Mick credit, the first one that I know of started asking for who are you meeting with and what are your emails?
That's
and
a great question.
Yeah, now the Tribune has taken it. I mean, I got to give them credit. They're obsessive about it. They're like always looking, filing for emails. And then, of course, then the issue becomes, it's not clear that Rahm or any politician is absolutely obligated to turn over every single email. And so, and then he can always claim, I missed this one or that one.
Right.
So when they turn over the emails, first of all, they redact a
everything,
lot of the information.
Yeah,
that's
vaguely
interesting.
That seems to be their only tool in protecting that information is
that and not turning over the information to begin with.
Right,
like when they gave the Tribune those text messages that you're alluding to, we don't know if they gave them every single text message that Rahm texted from Cuba when he was in Cuba. We just know those are the text messages that they chose to share.
So they can do that. They can say, okay, we'll give you some texts. We'll give you these. We're not going to give you these.
They're obligated under their law to give it all up, but it's an honor system, on one level, unless you're going to go to court and do a lawsuit and through the process of discovery to get them to come.
Which is amazing to me, because the idea of investigative journalism has turned into a big part of you have to use the legal system. I mean, we saw with Laquan McDonald and the pressure put on to get that video released. You see with the text
messages.
That was
through a lawsuit.
Yeah, through a lawsuit. But it seems to me like politics and the way that journalists and politicians interact with each other in 2016 has changed. It's sort of arbitrated by the courts.
No, it's not just that. I mean, this goes beyond Rahm, but he's mastered it. By and large, it's communication at best through email. So, God, in the old days, you call up a press person, you'd have a conversation, it'd be some off the record, some on the record, they'd give you the official line, then they'd tell you off the record what's really going on. Nowadays, for me, at best, I get an email response a week after my story is done. But for most reporters, I'm reading the paper, an email response from
they put everything in writing. And if people wonder why we send in so many FOIAs, there's no other way to get the information. You can't even get basic information. Most of the time, they make you submit a FOIA.
Interesting.
So
the day is gone where you could call the mayor's office and say, hey, I need a quote on, I want to know why this happened with the school district. They won't even talk to you about
that. Well, they may do that, but Ben's right. It'll be a canned statement. It'll be something that's so clinical and devoid.
There's no sort of like relationship with the spokesperson. Like, here's the deal, Mick.
Not really. I mean, some of them there are. You do have some off-the-record conversations or on background conversations, but if you want anything to put in your story, then it's going to be a canned talking point. And if you want any basic information, data, records, you have to go through FOIA. I mean, it used to be, I remember when I got started, you wanted information about a crime, you would call Police News Affairs and say, I heard there was a shooting on such and such a block, and they would give you the basic details. You can hardly get any of that anymore. You have to basically send in a FOIA for a police report and go through this whole huge process. And I think it's just a butt-covering, mechanism by the administration.
Let me ask you guys this as we're wrapping up here on time. You know, you mentioned, when you first started, and the ability to go to News Crime Affairs and be able to get that information and we talked about the FOIA stuff here in 2016. Is it easier or is it harder to be a journalist covering Chicago politics today
than
when you guys both started?
Oh, well,
because the internet says, okay, what's easier? Because there's so much more information. But is it easier?
Well, when you throw that in, I would say that it's probably easier. No, you know what? Let me strike that. It's harder today because in the old days, pretty much any of the budgets that you have on the internet. You could go get, there was something called the Municipal Reference Library. God, I'm really showing how old I am. And it was at City Hall.
You could go to an actual library, Ben? Yeah. Wow.
All the documents there were there.
I thought Ron got rid of the libraries because everyone just uses Amazon.
Yeah, yeah. Remember when he had Daly was the first to get rid of the Municipal Reference Library. Ron was just perfecting it. So I think it's across the board more difficult to get something vaguely resembling the truth from City Hall than it has been from any administration before Daly. Byrne was easier to get the truth. Washington and Sawyer. So it's been all downhill since Gene Sawyer.
What do you think, Mick?
Yeah, there's more information out there and available, but the quality of it is variable. I mean, so you do have to work. You can get data online and stuff, but like, what does it mean? And to ask, you know, for any kind of context to find out how it was generated, where it came from, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, just basic, you know, who, what, where, when, why kinds of questions. It's harder because everyone is so buttoned up. Everyone is it's a constant political campaign.
You know, for both you guys, that's a question I ask a lot of guests that come in, artists and creative types and authors who talk about, you know, what it's like to live in this city. Or what does this city mean to them? For you guys covering the city, covering politics, and choosing to live your lives here in Chicago, you know, is, I mean, you read your stuff and, you know, most of the time you guys are down on what's happening in the city. what does Chicago mean to you, Ben, to you, Mick, as actual Chicago citizens? I mean, talk about your relationship to the city.
Well, I have a very complicated relationship with Chicago, particularly the people of Chicago. I'm usually mad at them one level or another. I've been pretty much mad at all my fellow Chicagoans since April when they reelected Rahm, and now they're moaning and groaning about it. So I would say I have sort of this split personality when it comes. On one level, I mean, this is where I decided to live. So I raised kids here, got married, bought a house, all that stuff. So I must, there must be something here I like, but I'm usually in a perpetual state of mad at my fellow Chicagoans.
And that's why I read you, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It comes across.
How about you, Mick?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Michigan. Chicago is the closest city. And so I grew up coming here a lot, but I am still, I go at this sort of mystified by this place on one level. Like, even though I've lived here for more than two decades, I don't understand why we keep electing shallow strongmen to lead us. I just don't get it. Like, why can't we do better? You know, so I'm perplexed by that and just fascinated by it too. And I just see Chicago as like a great urban experience with all of the heart and soul of this place I love. But all of the just, you know, messed up stuff that's going on, the crime, the racial segregation, let alone the political corruption. I don't quite understand it, which is what fascinates me. So it's like an insect to the light, man.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's important to have you guys telling these stories because it seems like fewer and fewer places are investing in this kind of coverage. And that's a shame. The show's called First Tuesdays with Mick and Ben. It's a political talk show on stage the first Tuesday of every month at the Hideout in Chicago, 1354 West Waubonsia. It's the next one is Tuesday, February 2nd. You got Representative Ford. You got Chicago Alderman Roderick Sawyer. Mick Dumpke is an investigative reporter for the Sun-Times. Ben Jarofsky, columnist for The Reader. You guys got to come back. We got to continue the conversation. We didn't get to TIFFs.
Oh, gosh.
We didn't get to TIFFs. Maybe,
that's an hour right
maybe
there.
Maybe we can bump the next person to talk about TIFFs, okay?
Good to see you guys.
Thanks, Justin.
This is Chicago's very own 720, WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Coming up, we are going to talk with Sarah Grunberg. She's a chef at Monteverde, a new Italian place in the West Loop. She was in the kitchen at Spiaggia. She was a runner-up on Top Chef. You a Top Chef fan, Rob?
Absolutely.
You got it all going on. That's a good conversation with Mick and Ben, man. I love those guys. And I'm, you know, it's interesting about how reporting the news has changed. You know, it used to be just go find the source, get the quote, put the quote on, do the whole thing. And now, it's like politicians and lawmakers, they've gotten really savvy where they're like, there are, you know, go through the legal system if you want to get my quote. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And it makes your job so hard. You do it. I mean, I don't know how you guys do it.
I just love, in general, talking to reporters because they cut through the BS.
Right.
And the guys like you just had in, they're on the ground. They're doing it day in and day out.
And it's amazing to me that that, you know, it's funny how Ben said, like, the immediate reaction from any politician is no. Nope. Never said that. Never did that. You can't prove it. And then they go prove it. Mm-hmm. And then they go, well, you know, I didn't mean it. Like, you have to deal with all that stuff. I mean, nothing is what it seems.
Let me clarify that statement.
Let me clarify it.
No, it was pretty clear 2 months ago when I got it on tape.
Right, and you just saw it with Rahm Emanuel and the Laquan McDonald stuff. Yeah. And then when he came out afterwards and he said, you know what, we're going to be more transparent. We're going to give you more videos. And then the next video that came out, you found out that they were trying, while he was on the podium, trying to stop it from being seen by the public.
Oh, that's
and
right.
It's reporters that are doing the dirty work.
Well, and that's one more thing that I forgot to add. Not only is Pete not on sugar, he's doing it for the kids and the veterans, but he's also going to be more transparent.
Pete. I'm going to go stand by Pete.
I'm by Pete.
Where do I stand? Show me where to stand.
Honestly, I'm going to write Pete's name in this year.
I'm just going to raise my right hand. I go for anyone for Pete? Yes, I'm for Pete. I think that's in my head. That's how the Iowa caucuses work. That you just go, all right, who's next? Who's for Pete? I'm for Pete.
It's all about transparent kids.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We got 12 for Pete. How many for Donald? So great. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest just opened a restaurant in the West Loop. Well, it was this past fall, but Monteverde, a neighborhood soulful Italian spot on Madison Street, is already making a splash. It was included in several of the top new restaurant of 2015 lists. And Sarah Grunberg continues to see success in early 2016. You may know Sarah's name. She was once the chef de cuisine at Spiaggia and a television star. Well, she was runner-up on season 9 of Top Chef on Bravo. Tonight, we talk opening restaurants, reality TV fame, and soulful Italian. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Nice to meet you. All right, so let's talk about the food. I mean, I said soulful Italian. What does that mean?
Oh, gosh. Soulful Italian, to me, is capturing the heart of the cuisine that you can taste years of tradition. When you think of Italian food, I think you think of a grandmother, mm-hmm. you know, cooking for the family. And that kind of coincides with how I was raised and also with cooking. And I think that's why Italy is so exciting to me as a cuisine and as a country.
Well, you grew up in Texas.
Yes.
So you're not a native Chicagoan, but I mean,
No. So
in Texas, what were the inspirations for you? What were the influences on your work?
Well, you know, my grandparents were a huge influence. I would go and spend the summers with them fishing and helping my grandfather with his cattle. He had like over 200 head of cattle.
Wow.
And they always had a garden and they made pickles and my grandmother made bread. Like they didn't buy bread at the store. And I think that learning that food comes from hard work was something that I understood at a young age. Not that just meat shows up at the grocery store, you know, wrapped in plastic, that it's actually an animal that needs a lot of care and love and all those things, I think, really shape me for who I am as a chef.
As making the choice to go into the culinary arts to become a chef, I mean, does it go all the way back in your history to that moment where you were going to your grandparents? Or what was the defining moment where you said, you know what, I'm going to make my life in this?
Well, you know, I was a rebellious teenager, and I ended up cooking for my friends after school. And they'd all come over, and it was, Sarah's making lasagna today, or, you know. And so we would all play, like, what was that, Nintendo 64 back then, like 007, and I would be cooking lasagna. And so that, I kind of realized, wow, my hobby is cooking. I really like cooking. And my mom didn't complain. If I was cooking, then she was happy. And then the Food Network came out when I was about 12. And that's when I realized that chefs, like you could be a chef. Growing up in Texas, where I was from, it was a lot of chain restaurants where there were just like, there wasn't a face to the food. And when the Food Network came out and Irma Lagasse was there and, you know, those crowning shows, then I realized, wow, you can be a chef. And I think that was in like probably 95. Mm-hmm. And that's when I think that the U.S. started looking at chefs differently. Back then, I think they would bring a lot of chefs in from Europe to run big hotels and cruises.
And it was a lot of hotels and cruises. It wasn't this concept of, you know, standalone restaurants.
Right. I mean, there were some for sure, but not where I was from. So.
Well, one of those restaurants is Spiaggia. I mean, Pete and I were just talking about how Spiaggia almost predates the foodie explosion. Here in Chicago, everyone knows where Spiaggia's at. Everyone knows the just how great that restaurant is. And it sometimes gets lost when you think about, oh, there's a new place opening here in the West Loop, in the South Loop, wherever it is, you know. And people forget about Spiaggia, but it's always been there. What? Tell us about how you got to Spiaggia.
Wow. I got to Spiaggia with a plane ticket. Well, I worked for the Brennan family in Houston for 4 years, and that's the Commander's Palace, deeply rooted restaurant family. And I learned hospitality there, and I became the youngest sous chef at 22 for the Brennan family. And I knew I needed to go to a different city to see food in a food city. And so Chicago was the perfect option. I got a Southwest flight. And my friend, she was actually going to Second City, and she's like, come stay in my apartment. And my chef, Carl Walker, called several restaurants up here and said, I have this great chef. She's looking for jobs, and set up interviews. And right before I flew out, I interviewed at Spiaggia. It was like the same day I was flying out. And they said, well, we really like you. I met with Missy Robbins, and she said, well, you would need to come back. So then another plane ticket, and I flew up and staged for 2 days. And then she hired me, and I called my mom, and I said, I got the job. And then she started crying, and she booked a flight the next day, that Sunday, and we were looking for apartments. And that's how I got here.
Well, let's talk about your time at Spiaggia, because a lot of chefs come through that. Kitchen.
That's,
I mean, everybody, I mean, it has that Charlie Trotter effect.
Absolutely.
In the way that it does. So what did you learn from Spiaggia? And at what point were you like, you know what, I am ready to make the move myself to my own restaurant, to Monteverde?
I mean, working closely with Tony Montuano was some of the best time of my life. He's a great chef who really believes in allowing the people under him to spread their wings. He's really nurturing in that way. He doesn't put his thumb down, you know, like, and hold you down. He allows you to make mistakes and learn from them, which I think is really good and bad at the same time, but really good mostly. And, well, Spiaggia taught me about Italian food and how simple it is.
Right.
I mean, cooking Creole cuisine where the sauce was, you know, everything, right? And now going to an Italian cuisine where olive oil is the sauce and, you know, pasta, you don't pre-cook it. You cook it from fresh. And it just blew my mind. And when I got promoted to Chef de Cuisine, how Tony did it was so cool. He asked me if I had a passport. And I started crying because I was like, oh, my God, is someone sending me to Italy? Like, holy cow. And so Tony knew that in order for me to be successful, I needed to experience Italy for the first time. And that trip was when I caught the bug, when I realized that this was my path.
What about that trip? I mean, when you get sent by Tony Montuano to Italy, what are you doing there? And what do you take away from that trip?
Wow, a lot. I had a ticket into Rome and a ticket leaving Milan. And I was 26 years old, didn't speak the language. I started in Rome. I staged in two restaurants.
And that means, just for the people at home, stage means you guessed, right?
Yeah, stage is like kind of like a working interview if you're looking for the job. And if not, people also stage to just help out in the kitchen and learn things from that chef. Staging in Rome, I learned how to make cacio e pepe and carbonara, and that's when I tasted those Roman dishes. It was really, really cool. I actually had like a little apartment that I stayed in for a week, and I felt kind of like a Roman, and I didn't know what that meant, but yeah. Actually, the first thing I ate was raw shrimp, and I had to suck the heads out of the raw shrimp.
Wow.
And I was like, holy cow, this is crazy. But that's one of my favorite memories. And then from Rome, I went to Tuscany, spent some time with a good friend of ours, Alessandro Bellini, who has Viola Imports here in Chicago. I stayed with his mom and grandmother and brother, and we went and ate and experienced Tuscany and olive oil. And from there, then the most crucial part of the trip was meeting Andrea Bezzecchi. And he is a third generation balsamic maker. That meeting wasn't even supposed to happen. And he drove and picked me up in Parma and took me to his village called Novellara. And that was when my mind was blown. That's where Parmigiano Reggiano is made. I got to experience that, prosciutto di Parma, and balsamic. And I learned that balsamic was really a special ingredient. And then from there, I went to Del Pescatore, which is where Tony and Kathy worked 20 years before when they were going to open Spiaggia. And that's a 3-Michelin-starred restaurant run with the female chef, Nadia Santini. And I staged there. And then I went to Milan and spent some time in Milan. And then
that's a good trip.
And then I flew back. And in fact, our flight was canceled because so much snow. It was like record snow. And we were cooking at the James Beard House in New York the next day. So I had to end up just flying to New York and cooking at the Beard House the next day. It was a...
That's a good...
It's a whirlwind.
At least it's good memory, right? Sarah Grunberg's a chef and partner at Monteverde. It's a restaurant that just opened in the West Loop. When we come back, let's talk about that experience, about going from what you learned at Spiaggia and applying it to not only your what you want to do with the, in the kitchen, but also a new restaurant.
Okay.
It's a download. Stay with us. Welcome back to the download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Sarah Grunberg. She's the chef partner at Monteverde, the new restaurant in the West Loop. You know, you chef de cuisine, we just told a story about, you know, going to Italy, learning all about how to cook Italian food with one of the best here in Chicago. What made you say, you know what, it's time for me to branch out and to open my own place?
Yes, well, you know, it came after Top Chef. I stayed on at the Spiaggia for, I think almost 2 years after the show. And Top Chef gave me the confidence that I needed to cook my food. In fact, the judges looked at me during a challenge and they said, we know you can cook great Italian food. When are you going to show us your food? And I was like, well, what's wrong with Italian food? And so through that and through at that point, I'd been to Italy now 7 times, traveling all over. And so I really was starting to put together my story of Italian food. And that ties in the experiences with my family and ingredients and travel. I got to go to Asia for the first time and experience that. And that's when I started to put the story of pasta together. And it really became something that I wanted to celebrate. And that's what Monteverde is the celebration of pasta.
It's interesting because we have a lot of musicians on the show or even actors or writers, and they'll talk about, you know, finding their voice. And for chefs, it's not different. I mean, the idea of you need to find what's your take on the food that you're presenting.
Yeah, it takes a long time. I mean, I started cooking right when I was 19 and I'm 34 now. So, you know, you have to put the time in because you don't have the confidence. It's something that you kind of wake up overnight by putting the pieces together and go, oh, that's how it clicked together. But yeah, finding my voice was something that was a great experience.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Tony Montuano and you mentioned your experience on Top Chef. Those people seem to both want to nurture you or push you forward to say, find your voice. I mean, that seems to be what you hear from Chef Tony, what you hear from obviously watching Top Chef. How important was it for the people around you to continue to push you to find that voice?
I mean, it's really important. I didn't want to let Tony down. I really wanted to make Spiaggia the best that it could be. And for me, that confidence also came from learning the regionality of the Italian food and how important the regions are. And, you know, I kind of now I do it for all the people that mean something to me. I have this restaurant for my grandparents, for Tony, for Jamie, my fiance. You know, we met at Spiaggia. My business partner, Meg, her and I met at Spiaggia 10 years ago. You know, as much as I do it for myself, I do it for the people that believe in me and that push me. And I want them to be proud.
Let's talk about the restaurant because, you know, it's one thing to find the voice in your food. It's another to entirely to open up a restaurant. Yeah. I mean, there's so much that goes into running a business. How were you prepared for the transition of not just being a chef, but being a chef partner?
You know, my first sous chef job at Spiaggia was the purchasing chef. And so I purchased all the ingredients for all 3 of the entities there, cafe, private dining, and Spiaggia. And I was responsible for the food cost. And that's when I learned the products and the prices and really mastered the art of ordering, which a lot of chefs.
Yeah, right.
It's really hard.
That's especially when you're working from scratch or working fresh. That's a valuable resource.
Yes, absolutely. And then that was the great thing about what Levy Restaurants does for their chefs is they really push you to run the business yourself, of course, with the guidelines that they have. But I learned a lot about business. To me, the time of being the purchasing chef and then the executive chef at Spiaggia, it was like a mini business degree, you know, how to run a restaurant. Mm-hmm. My business partner now, Meg, she actually went to business school. So luckily, I don't need to worry about those things. She is the brain of Monteverde. She writes the budget and makes sure that we're on task and really is the rock of the restaurant.
Let me ask you this, because we've had different chefs and restaurateurs in here. And, you know, there's always this thought, because you were on Top Chef, that this is a very glamorous life, that you're running a restaurant, that, you know, you get to taste the stuff, you come in, you get to, then you get your limo outside and you roll to the next spot. This is a very demanding job. And talk to us about the challenges of running a restaurant. And it's not the glamour. You're not rich and famous just from being in charge of a restaurant.
Sure. I mean, it's a dirty job. Like, no one's going to sleep as well as you will, or got to clean out the drains and all that fun stuff. Like, it's, you know, it's a lot. And cooks need a lot of leadership. A restaurant it's a breathing, organic being. The reason why we all say it's a family and restaurants become our family, it's because it's true. It's like, you know, as much as we love everybody, and sometimes you're like, oh God, I got to get out of here, or, you know, and being the leader of that is 24/7 job.
Demanding. I mean, not only being the chef, you have to open the doors, and you talk to a lot of different chefs, and they're like, it is a 24-hour job.
Yes, because it's cooking. The margin for error is still very high. Keeping it consistent, the execution of the food consistent, I think for me has been the hardest thing with opening a new restaurant, because we opened from scratch. This isn't our second restaurant. This is our first one. We didn't get to pull anybody in that had worked under me for several years. You know, it was right. Like everyone has to start to learn what I expect and what I want for this kitchen. And that's a whole growing experience on its own. And for me to figure out what Monteverde is, I mean, that doesn't happen overnight. And as you get in the kitchen and start working and seeing the food coming out, that's when you really, I think for me, I started to put the pieces of what Monteverde truly is. But it doesn't happen until you're actually in the space, in the kitchen cooking.
Well, let's take a break for the news here on The Download. Sarah Grunberg's my guest. She's the chef partner at Monteverde. She spent years as chef de cuisine and executive chef at Spiaggia, and also was a finalist on Top Chef. When we come back, let's talk about that, because that, you talked about, you know, how they pushed you to find your voice, but it's just exploded in the way that you'll be the third, or you are the third alumni in just the West Loop. I mean, Chicago has such a presence on the show. When we come back, we'll talk more with Sarah about that experience and setting up shop in the West Loop. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest, Sarah Grunberg. She's the chef partner at Monteverde over in the West Loop on Madison Street. Sort of the newest restaurant, but it seems like every 10 minutes a restaurant's opening up in that area. What's it like to be a part of such an explosive restaurant scene that's happening here in Chicago?
It's great. I think that Chicago and the diners of Chicago, that they support these chef-run businesses, I think is fantastic. And like I said, that didn't happen in Houston, where I was from. You know, how many chain restaurants do you really see in Chicago?
Right.
Not that many.
Not that many.
It's a lot of chef-run concepts. And I think that's what makes this food city really top-notch, in my opinion.
You came off of Top Chef. You were a finalist in season 9, which was 2011. That's 5 years ago now. Isn't it amazing to think that was 5 years ago?
Yeah, it makes me tired thinking about it
Do you feel that experience, I mean, obviously it was transformative in the way that, you know, it made you a food celebrity. But thinking back on that experience, I mean, there's obviously the pros, but what were the cons? I mean, it's just people just constantly coming. We just, right before you came in the studio, someone's like, hey, Sarah. I mean, that's a good thing.
But it's a great thing.
Is there anything that we should know about being a contestant on Top Chef that isn't so great?
I mean, it's really hard. Like, my mom was like, it would have been great if you would have worn lipstick. And I was like, you have no time. My hair looked terrible in half those segments. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just trying to cook, you know. It's like, I just looked terrible. So it's like, you know, you don't know when you're going to wake up. You know, they get you going. And, you know, it's, to me, looking back on it, it's so cool to be thrown into this kind of alternate environment where there's a whole team. I mean, the production team is huge, and their whole purpose is to build these like obstacle courses for you to go through. There's nothing like that in normal life where that happens.
Right.
You know, it's like an experiment. It's like, who's going to make it this week? That's really how it is. And God, like everyone, I think for me, the hardest part is that when you watch the show, the viewers feel like we're competing against each other and, you know, they create this rivalry. But to be completely honest with you, it's an internal competition.
Right. It's just for you.
It's,
right.
I'm fighting to make it myself. It's you don't have time to look and see what the other people next
but they
to you
edit it
doing.
To make it seem like that's
you
the
have no
competition.
Time like
yeah.
You're like, can I cook this amount of food, you know, in 2 hours? I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to do this and make it taste fantastic and buying ingredients at the grocery store. Like, it's insane. You know?
Well, I mentioned before that, you know, you will be the third, or you are the third alumni of the show that just set up within blocks. I mean, it's, I mean, how strong, I mean, there's so many different people from Chicago that have competed on that show. What's the camaraderie like? I mean, is there a special sort of head nod and wink
oh,
to the
sure.
people that were on the show?
Yeah, it's a sorority or fraternity. I mean, I never went to college in that kind of environment. And it's like your own club. I mean, it's like when you meet other top chefs, you're like, hey, what's up? Even if you never met them, you just know. It's like we've been through this together. You know, it's kind of like summer camp, right?
Right.
It's like those days at camp, you know, it's like those days at Top Chef.
And it's kind of like a camp.
It is. It's, and you know, the first, I tell people that. I'm like, the first day you're going, ugh, what am I doing? And then the last day you're like, I don't want to go home. I want to stay with my friends. Like, you really become this, like, really tight group. Especially when you go as far as the, you know, we did and that I did all the way to the end. I mean, I made it all the way to the final,
right.
Which was awesome.
Looking back on it, I mean, obviously you're now in a position where you have your own restaurant. And Chicago, like you said, it's such an interesting way to look at it that there are a lot of chef sort of run, locally run restaurants and not chains here in Chicago. But another part of it is, you know, you'll see other chefs become restaurateurs. Where, you know, I think of One-Off Hospitality or Hog Salt, companies that have taken one restaurant and made 10, you know, 15. Where do you see yourself? I mean, do you see yourself, are you at the point where Monteverde is your restaurant and this is what you're going to do? Or are you thinking more along the track that you're going to be a business that opens more restaurants?
Oh, man, I think, you know, for Meg and I, we both felt like we wanted to open more. But after going through this with Monteverde, I will be very happy and blessed if it's successful and busy and people love it long term. I think that longevity of restaurants is really hard. And like
yeah.
we talked about that with Spiaggia. I couldn't imagine, you know, having 10 kids to worry about. Like, one kid is enough. And I think that for restaurateurs to have those many restaurants, you know, you have to spend time at the restaurant that needs you the most. And it's a constant balance. Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe something really casual, like counter service concept.
Like a window that opens up on
yeah,
the side,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Monteverde right now, to go.
It'd be awesome. I love it.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
It's interesting because there's the old adage that says, you know, most restaurants, regardless of its of their style, they'll be lucky to hit 5 years. It's a very volatile it's, because of the ups and downs of ingredients. And the business is very short term and the overhead is very low. So talk a little bit about, you know, what's successful for you. I mean, for a restaurant like this, I mean, is it successful to have Monteverde for the rest, you know, for eternity? Or is it
oh,
the
gosh.
Idea that, you know, hey, if this thing makes it to a certain point, you know, maybe I'll try my next concept.
I mean, I'd be really blessed if we're open as long as Spiaggia has, you know, if we can push
yeah.
the 30-year mark. What a blessing. And, you know, I think I'll take a chapter from Tony's lesson to me, which is promote people from within to help keep that restaurant alive. And that's what you have to do. But to keep the restaurant for me with Monteverde now, I'm just cooking what I love to eat. Like, I wanted to create a restaurant that I can cook Italian food like I experienced it for people in Chicago to get a real Italian experience. And the food's got to be craveable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's kind of. Like
and this town is not
somewhere got uncraveable. Do you know what I mean? At
yeah.
restaurant, you'll go and you're like, "That was good." Do you want to eat it every day? No. But Italian food's craveable.
And Italian food is a big part of Chicago. I mean, there's a lot of Italian food from Spiaggia at the high end to what you guys do. But there's also a mom and pop kind of thing. I mean,
oh,
you have a lot of restaurants even in the West Loop or closer to the West Loop, like La Scarola, where there's some straight up like long term serving Italian restaurants. How do you compete with that? People have their favorites. It's like it feels to me like that's a favorite restaurant. If I have Italian, I have a favorite.
You do, yes. You know, I don't know. My secret, I guess, is just cooking food from the heart. And I think that's where the soulful presence comes from. And it might sound cheesy, and I'm not trying to be cheesy about it, but that's how I cook. Like, I get really emotional about food. I get emotional about the story that food tells, the stories of people traveling, you know, pasta coming from China to Rome through the Silk Road, and how, you know, pre-Christopher Columbus, there were no tomatoes, corn, squash, bean. Like, those New World foods were not in Italian food. And people think of Italian food as tomato sauce. Right. Well, what's the story of Italian food before that? And I think that, I don't know, I just get really emotional about food, and I love it. Like, my brain, it's like a curse. Like, my brain never shuts off about food, ever.
It's a curse.
Treadmill. Some of my best recipe creations have been at the gym, which I probably need to get to the gym now. But I have been a little busy at the restaurant.
Well, good to know. I mean, your restaurant, Monteverde, is the newest addition to the West Loop. It's on Madison Street. And my guest tonight, Sarah Gruenberg, who was a finalist Top Chef Season 9 and also the former chef de cuisine at Spiaggia. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you for being here. And, you know, for all of us, we hope that you continue to come up with new recipes while at the gym, I guess. I don't know.
My brain's always on, basically.
Hopefully it doesn't shut off.
Thank you.
Good conversation there with Sarah Gruenberg. It's great. You know, I love sitting down with chefs. It's amazing to me how many great chefs are in Chicago, number one. And number two, are working right now under other chefs. I mean, that's what Sarah did. I mean, she worked under Tony Montuano and Spiaggia for years and is able to branch out. I mean, it's almost like a coaching tree for the NFL.
Yeah, right. Seriously.
So it's amazing. I mean, it's great. Good for her. And I am looking forward to partaking in that restaurant.
Oh, I am starving.
Are you really?
Oh, man.
The no sugar.
I think it is. Yeah, I wonder if we can call it. Would they deliver here?
Oh, that's so, yeah.
That's a radio thing
that's
to
such
do.
Such a radio thing to do. Yeah, I know. And we can get a couple pastas over here. When I started on the show, and that is a radio thing to do, but there was always a question of people working nights are like, hey, where's the food? Because that's a big thing. Like, you can get people to order food.
Bring over dinner.
But we bring our stuff from home. We're home guys.
Yeah. I have my breakfast, lunch, and dinner, my three meals that we usually eat here.
It is so much Tupperware that is stacking up in our office right now. And, you know, I've been on this crockpot challenge.
Yeah.
For the last...
How's that going?
It's going pretty well. I'm getting more skilled at cutting vegetables. The first time I did it and the second time I did it, it was so precise. Took like 45 minutes to cut an onion. Now I'm just like... And it's in there. No, the latest I did was like a sausage and peppers kind of thing. So good. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
What kind of cutlery are you working with? Do you have, like, good knives or...?
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know. It's whatever knives are there. They were good at one point. I think when I got them when...
Your birthday present coming up.
So, you should give me a gift certificate for a sharpening. Like, not new knives, but just sharpening.
Yeah.
I'm sure people do that, right? You go to a place and be like, can you sharpen these?
Yeah, up in Rogers Park, that at the farmer's market, they usually have... A sharpener there.
Nice.
Bring your knives and
sharpen
them.
That would be a good present, wouldn't it? It's $15. $15 gift certificate to sharpen this. To sharpen. I don't know what you want to sharpen. You sharpen whatever you want.
Everything, like when I take a stab at cooking, everything much like yourself, you didn't say this, but when you're meticulous, like it takes me like 45 minutes to make a salad.
Yeah. I'm terrible. What I don't understand is it was a good call to do the crockpot stuff because it's really giving me a chance to see how different ingredients come together. It's great to watch 8 to 10 hours of something like just sort of simmer and then cook. And then you're like, wow, it's great for here. I just do it. Then I go back home and it's there. But, you know, I'm looking forward to the next step, you know, like putting in a saute pan, you know, or trying something that might be a little bit like making a sauce.
Making your own sauce.
Yeah. Right now, I mean, don't get me wrong. The crock, I still got a long way to go. You know, if you listen to the show, you know that, you know, one of my New Year's resolutions was to cook more. And I decided the best way to do that was to go to the Target and buy the crock pot, mm-hmm. which the price was wrong, but I was too scared to argue about it. And so, I feel like I'm probably on the sixth or seventh recipe now.
Wow.
Yeah, and I feel like it's going well. I did a enchilada over the weekend.
Did you buy a book? Did you mm-hmm. buy a cookbook?
I bought a book, and the book's no good. But the but I realized there's this thing that Al Gore invented that's called the internet, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of there's like just like crockpot everything. I don't know why anyone makes a book anymore, like a recipe book, because you can find all that stuff on all the sites. It's funny because I was at Whole Foods. And they have, you know, Bon Appetit or magazines, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I should get one of these magazines. You know, they're going to be recipes. I should be that kind of guy. Like, it was like $14 for the magazine, which is crazy.
What?
Yeah, it was totally, totally, totally too expensive.
Does it come out once a year?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what I was doing. That's a big part of, like, anything I do at the grocery store. I don't know what I'm doing. And I got it home, and it wasn't even like, it was just like, oh, you want to make your own stock? No, I don't. I want to be able to do something very simple. Mm-hmm. And I realized I may have overshot. That magazine was not for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's I made maybe a huge mistake.
Maybe next year.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, creating kale, yeah. You know, like a kale sauce. That's just not my thing.
Put it up on your, like, refrigerator. And, right. You know, and that's like your goal. Like, you know, if you need my picture, I put my picture of my bikini.
Anyone comes over, I put it out. Oh. Well, yeah, I was just with maybe a couple little post-it notes in different spots. Yeah, just I'm working on a kale sauce. No, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I'm 41 years old. And I feel like I spent the last my adult life avoiding cooking. And I know that's weird. I do a lot of takeout. I do a lot of pizzas and a lot of delivery. And I just, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a guy's guy in that kind of way. And the basics I got covered. I can do pasta. I can do that kind of stuff when I need to do something that's different. But I really never got into it. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, like, trying to put this together has been kind of a great adventure through January. I just got to stick at it. You know what I got to do is Sloppy Joe's. Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that, don't you pretty much make that in a crock pot? Isn't that what crock pots are for? I feel like there's like 9 Sloppy Joe's things in the book. Which is like Sloppy Joe with cheese.
Yeah.
You know, wild boar Sloppy Joe. Like that kind of stuff. You're just like, all right.
Yeah, it's good that the crock pot, you can kind of just set it and let it go.
That's the best thing in the world.
Last weekend or a couple of weekends ago, I decided to make the family grilled cheese. You know, basic. But again, everything takes me so long that I ended up making just one grilled cheese because it was like, I don't feel like making the second one. It's too much work. I'm going to just like put slabs and peanut butter and jelly on this plain bread.
Right.
Yeah. Cooking's hard.
It is hard. 847 says, I did the gas station microwave beef and bean burrito. It was really good tonight. So that's a thank you for that. And 224 says, sur la table. Is that right how you say it?
Sure.
Is it sur la table? No, it's table, right? It's sur la table.
Mm-hmm.
They sharpen knives.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So there you go.
You need all the help you can get.
Rob, where do you get your knives? Are you a cooker? You cook? You chef?
You know what? I wish I had more time.
Yeah.
I've got like one or two, like two signature dishes that I can do that taste pretty good.
What do you do? What is? Come on.
I do. It's very easy. It's shrimp. Sauteed in lemon, olive oil, and garlic over linguine.
Oh, yes.
Is really yummy and really quick, actually, too, which is great. And then I do, we've got a family meatball recipe, which is good.
I think we should do a download, like, cooking show. Like, we should go up to the test kitchen up here at the Tribune and, like, just pitch it. Pitch it to Tribune Media.
Or what we could do is the three of us bring in our signature dishes and then have kind of like a...
It would have to be like 10 hours because mine's going to be a crockpot thing. And we'd have to wait here 10 hours till mine simmered.
I like Rob's thinking, though. The little top chef, contestants.
We should go right up to the CEOs of Tribune Media and be like, we have a new idea. It's a cooking show.
We want Pod Malakshmi.
Hey, Larry Word.
Hey, Larry.
What do you think of these meatballs? You like them? They're juicy, aren't they?
Would you like Rob's meatballs? Do you like Pete's salad, peanut butter and jelly?
I would murder all of you.
Would you want to be in?
Oh. I'm just going to say that.
How about
no contact?
How about
this is the new beef?
What would you what would you bring to the table? What would be your signature dish, Esmeralda?
I do a mean chile verde.
Oh man, no!
The pork shoulder,
yeah,
cooked for a couple hours, super tender. It's delicious.
Oh man.
I also some friends of mine. We do competitions. We did a chili cook-off.
Oh, great.
And now we're doing a soup one, and I know I have it in the bag. My dad gave me a recipe for his broth for a Chinese noodle soup.
Oh.
And I'm going to make homemade wontons.
Wow. That's impressive.
Kill it.
I know, right?
Kill it.
I'm feeling so inadequate right now.
I know. I was
meatballs and shrimp.
I was really feeling good about this conversation until everyone started saying, oh, this is what I do at home. And I'm like, oh, well, I put six sausages in a cut-up onion and that thing of pasta sauce, and I did it for 9 hours.
Yeah, let's get this going.
Yeah, I think it would be good. It'd be almost like a I think a chili cook-off's a good idea. I wouldn't even know what to do, but who's the judge? Do we just get people off Michigan Avenue?
We'll get, like, you know, good Catherine DiOrio, who, you know, that's the, you know,
think
check
people from the biz.
Yeah,
like, get a Brendan Soderkopf in here and be like, I like what Esmeralda's throwing out here. Mm-hmm. I like this.
Not sure if Rob threw a full block of salt in this, but it's a little salty.
Yeah. Get the movers and shakers of the city, the food culinary scene here.
I think we're onto something. I think we got it. I think a cook-off that's judged by the prime, mm-hmm. the primo. Cream of the crop.
Grant Achatz.
Achatz comes in and tastes all of our stuff and decides who the winner is. Oh, my God. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then perhaps if the winner wins a menu item on the person's restaurant, like Grant Achatz has to serve Esmeralda's wontons at Next.
I think Esmeralda's in.
Could I get to Next? Would I be able to go in?
Absolutely not. There's no reservations available. That's the only catch, is that you can't taste your own stuff because it takes 6 months to get a reservation. I think you're out of something, Pete. Just got a great text that said the farmer's market guy is $5 a knife. So there you go. I love it. I mean, we start talking about crock pots and cooking, and the texts go wild. There's a text from I'm a nutritionist, you know. What are you doing? Are you doing a paleo thing? What are you doing? And they missed the beginning of the combo. No, not a paleo thing. A crock pot thing, because I don't know what I'm doing. It has nothing to do with any sort of diet. The farmer's market guy did ribs in the crock pot. Some of the best finished off with sweet baby Ray's.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'll do that. That sounds good. So lots going on here. All right, coming up, character flaws. We got the best of sketch, improv, and performance tonight, Wednesdays, 10 o'clock. Esmeralda, did you say there's a roll of carpet?
Yes.
Like a rolled up, like, area rug?
It's probably just a roll, like a carpet, like a big thing of carpet, you know, yeah. Trucks.
Like just in the middle of the highway?
Yeah, you know, stuff falls off of trucks.
I mean, what else can you tell us about the rug? It's obviously if someone would want to go out there and get it, it's a free rug.
I mean, that would be dangerous because
it is
shag? In the center lane.
Cool kind of shag like that everybody's got?
I do not advocate going to try to pick it up. It's in the center lane of a highway.
You go to Restoration Hardware, you get one of those cool shag. That could be. I mean, you never know what you're going to get.
I feel like Cousin Eddie from Christmas Vacation.
Exactly.
What are you going to do with that carpet there, Clark?
What are you going to do? If you don't mind, we're going to take that. And Rob, I had a great question about that Trump story. So Trump went on Fox News tonight. To talk about how he's boycotting Fox News.
On the O'Reilly Factor.
Come on, man.
I didn't have the volume turned up, but given the faces of those two gentlemen, the conversation looked pretty heated.
And I read today that he went. He's been on Fox News 132 times.
Sure.
During this campaign already, and for him to say I'm going to boycott and do that whole speech about these networks want to make money, make money off of you've been on 100. The man's 132 times.
Here's a shining example of the ratings bounce that networks get when they talk about Trump. All night it seems CNN has been talking about how Trump is not showing up. On the Fox debate.
It's crazy.
On CNN.
It's like they flipped the world upside down in terms of media rules and all that kind of stuff. And it's all over something that, I mean, I kind of agree with Trump in the way that this is like, what, the 26th debate? that these guys have done. And that's the one kernel of truth he pulled out. He's like, how many debates do we got to do? I mean, this is obviously it's me and all these losers, these 0% losers. But the point being that, yeah, it might be overkill, you know, in the idea. But there's got to be better ways to do it than to fake a boycott over Megyn Kelly. But
well,
there you go.
There you have it. I'm just trying to be all like it.
It's a download here on WGN, and it's a 10 o'clock hour on Wednesdays, so that means it's time for Character Flaws. That's right. We decided we'd like to honor some of the great performers and writers and comedians that are here in this town. It is really amazing how much talent's available in this town in Chicago and how much of it's available to this show. I mean, there's so many people who want to perform. They want to be a part of what we're doing here. So we're going to use Wednesdays at 10 o'clock for a new segment we're calling Character Flaws. In it, we bring you sketch comedy, characters, and, of course, improv. It's going to be a fun ride. So sit back and enjoy. I'll host it and participate, of course. Tonight, improv veteran Jimmy Carain joins us, which is going to be fun. Adam Witt and Sandy Marshall return. And we'll dish out relationship advice scored by 80s light rock, because that's the only way that we take it here in Chicago. So let's get at it. It's Character Flaws tonight on WGN. That's the download. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Welcome back to the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Very excited tonight. Javi Havivola, our Blackhawks analyst, is in studio, which I'm very excited about. And I realize, you know, he's been on a couple times, and, you know, we've gotten the handwritten letters about sometimes it doesn't make sense. And I realize it might be more on me because, you know, English is not Javi's first language, and I'm not doing a good enough job to translate it for him. You know, I feel like maybe if I listened a little bit more and I did a better job of translating what Javi was saying, then it would make more sense, or at least, you know, that's a thought. So why don't we do that? The download's hockey correspondent, the Blackhawks analyst, Javi Havivola. Javi, of course, was a player with the Blackhawks back in the 2000-2001 season. He also played a little bit in the Rangers system. He is in town. This is great. He's in town teaching his famed hockey camp up in Estonia Park. Not sure where that's at, but Javi, welcome to the download. Good to see you.
Thank you for having me. It's Estonia Latviaville. It's on the north side.
Oh, okay.
Steps to the L, great shopping, one very good restaurant, and a fencing company.
Oh, there you go.
Not the sword fencing. We fence your
yeah,
yard.
Like
wire fence.
Okay, well, good to know. You learn something new about the area every day. Javi, talk about this year. I mean, the 2016 Blackhawks are off to such a great start to the year. It's unbelievable. People are starting to wonder if this team's the best we've seen from the Blackhawks.
Despite all the variations when hockey was first played, the first organized hockey game played indoors occurred in 1875 in Montreal, Canada.
That's interesting. I guess that's a really good point, because the Blackhawks may be the best team the NHL's ever seen. You're right.
Well, the Stanley Cup was created in 1893. It was named for Lord Stanley of Preston, the Canadian Governor General.
That's true. That it could be, you know, they may need to think about renaming that cup after the Blackhawks win it again this year.
Yeah, the greatest player of all time, Wayne Gretzky, has 61 NHL records. Nobody else can come close to this many records.
That's a great point, too, Javi, because as we've seen so many records broken, Patrick Kane and the Chicago Blackhawks seem to have records on their mind.
The first NHL million-dollar contract went to Bobby Orr in 1971. It was a $200,000 five-year contract.
Well, that's true. The Blackhawks are going to have some contract issues, but luckily they've been really good with their money, and we don't see huge contract problems with their big stars for a couple years to come.
Originally, the Stanley Cup was only 7 inches tall. Today, it is more than 35 inches tall.
Yeah, I'm standing tall on the shoulders of giants. The Blackhawks are giants. They're the giant. They're the best team.
Human saliva has a boiling point 3 times that of regular water.
Okay. Yeah, that I'm not even sure what the. I mean, that's a great point.
Yeah. The person who first invented the Frisbee was cremated and made into Frisbees after he died.
Okay, there we go. Now I think maybe we're getting off track just a little bit.
Polar bears can eat as many as 86 penguins in a single sitting.
There you go. So Javi Javavola, the Download's Blackhawks analyst.
During your lifetime, you will produce enough saliva to film two swimming pools.
There you go. This is really into saliva. Javi, great to see you. Good luck with the camp.
If you lift a kangaroo's tail off the ground, it can't hop.
There. Yeah. So.
Do you want one more?
Sure.
Heart attacks are more likely to happen on a Monday.
Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
The Download's Blackhawks analyst, Javi Javavola, who is in town doing his hockey camp up in... was Estonia Park,
mm-hmm.
or Latviaville.
Yeah. One good restaurant.
And what did they serve? Of course, Javi is also known by his name, Sandy Marshall, who works for Second City and is part of the group Schadenfreude. Okay, when we come back, we're going to have some more. Jimmy Corain's going to join us. Jimmy Corain, legend from The Annoyance and from Improv Olympic. And we're also going to do some Nightwind, which is taking your relationship advice, 312-981-7200. We figure this is what people love about radio in Chicago. I mean, it gets all the rate. It's really the number one format in Chicago radio is sort of relationship advice scored by 80s light rock. So we'll have that coming up after the news. Stay with us here. It's Character Flaws. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. You know, I'm having such a hard time with these headphones. It just feels like they're short. Do you feel that? No? You know what? I guess we should probably, we should get Al in here. Great. Hey, Al, come on in.
What is it, Kaufman?
Al, I thought there was no smoking in
the studio. It's an e-cigarette. I've been grandfathered in. What's your problem?
No, there's something wrong with these headphones. They keep shorting out and they're kind of electrocuting me.
Were you swimming the last couple days? You got water in your ear?
No, I wasn't swimming. I mean,
you got vertigo?
I don't have vertigo, no.
You check your hearing?
I haven't.
Okay, I'm going to make a sound right now. Okay, tell me if you hear it. You hear that sound?
I did, yeah.
Okay, well, it's not your hearing then.
Okay, well, I didn't think it was a hearing. I just think I could tell it's short.
I'll tell you what the problem is with you kids today, you millenniums. Everybody's got to win a trophy, right? Everything's got to have cilantro on it. And I'll tell you think because Steve Cochran has headphones and Bill and Wendy have headphones, the Kaufman's got to have headphones. Well, it doesn't work like that. I'm going to tell you right now, life is not fair, and radio, commercial radio in particular, is even worse.
Yeah, no, I understand. These are the studio headphones, though.
I'm going to tell you something. I work with some great talent in this building. Wally Phillips, Bob Collins, Spike Odell. You know what they all had in common, Kaufman?
What?
They didn't use headphones.
They didn't use headphones at all?
Ever.
Well, how did they hear the...
They had good hearing.
Well, okay. Well, I just thought that was what
I don't get it with you millenniums. I really don't. If you Google something, if you don't find it, then it doesn't exist.
No, I know. I don't think this is a millennial thing. I just think that the headphones...
You want a trophy? You want a little little pat on the back? Everybody's doing a good job here. You know what? I told Pete, your producer, okay, to call me when there's an emergency. I was going over the Billy Goat to get a little libation in a styrofoam cup, if you know what I mean, and bring it over here. And then he pages me and says, an emergency. And a guy whose headphones don't work does not sound like an emergency. I thought I'd have to come and give one of you CPR or something.
It's just we thought that there's equipment that doesn't work, and that's, Al, it's in your area, and that's I'm sorry to offend. Just think that...
You know, do you know the history, how long I've been here?
You tell me a lot.
Do you know? Are you just saying that, Kaufman, or what?
Yes, I'm just saying.
Is that your real name, or is that your radio name?
It's my radio name.
That's a good choice, I'll tell you that. I came from Cincinnati. I worked 2 weeks before Orion Samuelson came into this building. All right?
That's, yeah.
You know, everyone talks about, they brag about the Chicago School of Broadcasting, Chicago School of Television. I came from the Cincinnati School. No one's ever heard of that. I did a kids program called Uncle Bucky and Lester. And I'll tell you something. I'll tell you something about these kids shows today. They talk down to the kids. We did not talk down to the kids, all right? We did stuff that the kids' parents were afraid to talk about, like safe sex, responsible drinking. We handed
the kids show and you talked about safe sex?
Yeah, we did. You know why? Because you know what? You got to hook them in. You got to hook the parents in.
Okay. I don't doubt your credentials to be in the building.
You know, I went over that Museum of Broadcast History, you know. I'm not mentioned there. You know who's mentioned? You know, has a whole wall there? Gary Coleman. And I'll tell you something. Gary Coleman never did a local program, all right? I did a local program, a whole wall. So you tell your friend Bruce Dumont to look into that.
Okay, well, you know, we had him on the show, but
You never brought that up because you don't ask the hard-hitting questions.
I don't get you.
Coleman.
I didn't ask
you. I don't get you.
Okay, really, right.
You know, maybe you know what? Maybe I'm just an old dinosaur. You don't need me anymore here, right?
No, that's
you
not
with your little iPhone you play on and your little iPads and all this stuff.
Right.
You know what? Maybe an old relic like myself. You don't need me. You know, maybe I should just go back down into my office and just sit there and play a Sudoku or whatever you kids play today.
Al, no, that's
I'm
not,
leaving. This is
no, Al, come back. No, you're not a relic. I'll put away the phone. I'm sorry. I don't need the headphones. Al, you're much more important to the institution, to the city of Chicago than this iPhone.
You know what WGN stands for?
World's Greatest Network?
No, it doesn't. See? World's Greatest Newspaper.
Oh, right.
And when Colonel McCormick hired me, I was the only engineer in this building, Kaufman.
Which is why the heat's all messed up, but okay.
I am not responsible for heat and air conditioning, all right? That's Sam.
Well, Al, I appreciate it, and you know, it's important to learn the history lessons of this building and this place and everything about it, and I'm sorry for even bringing you down here for a stupid thing like headphones. I don't need them. You're right. I don't need them.
Now you are one of the greats at WGN.
Thanks, Al.
With Wally, Bob, Spike.
We'll be right back here on Download. Stay with us. There we go. Well, Al, the engineer here. That was played by Jimmy Corrain. Jimmy Corrain, of course, tremendous improviser in town. He was one of the original performers at the Annoyance Theater. He did a great one-man show called I'm 27 and I'm still live with my parents. And he also now does the podcast Improv Nerd, which you can find at jimmycorrain.com. You can also find him. He teaches improv. He does a blog on improv. He's a great guy. And thank you for coming in and doing that improvisation. Much more to come tonight on Download. Character flaws, of course. We're going to talk to our critic, our pretentious alt-weekly critic, who we once named Jonathan Rosen Critic, but we feel like maybe we'll give him a different name. He's going to interview or he's going to review the new Kung Fu Panda. I can't wait to hear that. So that'll be coming up after the news. And also, hey, 312-981-7200. If you need relationship advice from a late night 80s light rock DJ, because you know those guys and gals, they know everything about love. If you need advice, you know, trouble with the relationship, Folkman Jack is the guy that you want to answer. He's got great relationship advice, and he also has some great Phil Collins. So that'll be coming up after the news as well. It's Character Flaws. Character Flaws here on the Download. I got to say, back to our conversation at 9 o'clock, it's amazing how many people are just sending me crockpot recipes. It's like nonstop.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. It's actually, like I said, you don't need a book anymore because you have the internet or people who will text you pictures of the book. That's what I'm getting.
All books? You don't need any books
anymore. I don't need any. I mean, this is the beginning. First, it's crockpot recipes.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's fiction, classics, things like that, where people are just going to Snapchat
Dickens. That sounded gross. That's what's going to be the new media. You just Snapchat the new Lord of the Rings. Obviously, isn't a new Lord. Lord of the Rings is done, right? Does J.R. Tolkien have any other stories that that Peter Jackson could make into movies?
We could ask our critic.
Oh, that's a good question. Yes, yeah. We could. Coming up.
He would know.
He would know. We're going to get the Alt Weekly's take on Kung Fu Panda 3. But first, let's get a check on the news. It's just a character flaw. It's Character Flaw here on WGN Radio. This is where we do the best improv and sketch and performances that Chicago has to offer. Great town with great performers. So we might as well showcase it, right? It's kind of like the Midnight Special from, you know, the show from back in the day on WFMT. It's the same concept here, and I think we should bring it back here in Chicago, and we are, and it's important for us to. So coming up, we're going to, you know, we want to take your calls because we are very fortunate to have late night love advice talk radio star Folkman Jack, who gives great relationship advice, of course, underscored by 80s light rock. It's the only way to give relationship advice. That's coming up here right pretty much in about 10 minutes. So 312-981-7200 is the number. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to get advice from Folkman Jack tonight. But first, you know, I got to say, very excited to bring to Character Flaws, you know, some film review, because that's important. And I know that you're very excited about to see some movies this weekend. One of them, of course, being Kung Fu Panda 3. Everybody wants to see it. I mean, they're just clamoring. There's so many people dressing up like pandas and waiting in line at the 600 North Michigan. It's crazy for the Wednesday night showing. But tonight we get our special and very important review of Kung Fu Panda 3 from Yakov Kritikway. He's a critic for the film blog Le Pretension. Yakov, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Justin. It's great to be here. Whatever.
Okay. Well, thank you for doing this, and I'm very interested in your review. Go ahead.
Well, I tell you, I'm not in a good mood, I'll tell you, because I was supposed to review Les Gars qui Avaient, The Quiet Glance Upwards, the French experimental film that dissects a single glance at a cafe in Chalon-sur-Saône over the course of a three-hour running time, contrasting the love of two political refugees with the invention of the internal combustion engine. But instead, when I handed the usher the Critics Association invitation to the screening, I was led to a theater showing Kung Fu Panda 3. Well, after some protest, I was informed by the manager of the AMC River East, with the help of the internet, that A Quiet Glance Upwards was only screened once in 1965, after which the print was set fire to. Well, no wonder I wanted to see it. So, the multiplex suit went on to explain that there was no way to confuse the French title, Les Gars qui Avaient, with the English-language blocky cartoony font of Kung Fu Panda 3. So, I was seated upon our agreement that doing so was not not an admission of guilt on my part. And so began the assault on my most delicate sensitivities of watching Kung Fu Panda 3. Ugh. Now, this Kung Fu Panda 3 is directed by a computer, and it requires an impossible suspension of disbelief that A, pandas are not endangered species, B, that pandas can talk, and C, that they could do Kung Fu, and also they're friends with tigers. Anyway, the point is special effects have gone too far when they suggest to an audience of intelligent critics that we can solve the disappearance of a species by hitting Command-P. So the movie unfolds unchallengingly, treating the audience like a bunch of children. And I was so incensed that I stormed out to the lobby and asked the representative from the Critics Association if he called this catering. Oh, I forgot to mention it was supposed to be catered, but they only gave away nachos and soda. No wine. I didn't put on my good sweatpants to be treated like a common moviegoer. So anyway, I finally got back to the theater. I was unable to focus on the pedestrian second act of a movie that wishes it could capture the character dynamics of honor and a similar documentarian of the Asian tradition of the modern world, Akira Kurosawa. They'd only wished it could be Kurosawa. Instead, the movie was so insulting, it was an insult to insult. As if to say to an insult, you, sir, are nothing but a compliment. Sorry, I got lost in the logic of how to offend an insult. Anyway, what was I saying?
Kung Fu Panda 3.
No, Kung Fu Panda 3. Well, I'll tell you what. The bottom line on Kung Fu Panda 3, if that is its real name, is I wouldn't bother to strangle Kung Fu Panda 3 with the intestines of the writer of DreamWorks Animation's Home. And this movie is a pile of filth I wouldn't compost a copy of Beverly Hills Chihuahua with. You, Kung Fu Panda 3, are nothing but a mere compliment. Somewhat recommended.
Somewhat recommended. Yakov Kritikwe. He's a critic for the film blog Les Pretensions. Yakov, thank you so much. I think you gave a lot to us tonight here on the show.
Have a good time.
Yakov also translates to Adam Witt, who, of course, does a lot of work for us here on the download. That was good. I want to see it now. I really want to see it. All right, more to come here on the download. Let's take a break. We come back. It's time for Nightwind.
Troy Murray on Coach Q.
All right. His character flaws, as we keep going here on the download every Wednesday night, 10 o'clock, we do character flaws, focusing on the best sketch, improv, and character work the city's got to offer. Performances, of course. Tonight, we decided that based on the Chicago radio listening patterns, that the best thing to do really any night on any radio station, it's not talk, it's not music, and it's not sports. Nope. It's relationship advice scored by 80s light rock. Ladies and gentlemen, 312-981-7200 if you need relationship advice. It's time for Nightwind with your host, Folkman Jack.
Tonight, I celebrate my love for you. It seems the natural thing to do.
Hello. Welcome to Nightwind.
No one's gonna find.
I'm your shaman, Folkman Jack. I'm here to listen to you and help you with all your problems that you might be facing in your personal life. Because let's face it, relationships are hard. So in an effort to help, I've got my whole CD collection of 80s light rock at my disposal. Because nothing soothes a broken heart like 80s light rock.
Tonight, our spirits will be climbing to a sky lit up with diamonds. When I make love to you.
312-981-7200. What's your problem? Victoria, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mike.
It's Jack.
I have a real problem with my boyfriend.
Okay. Go ahead.
And he's downstairs on the couch, and I want him to come upstairs and sleep with me. What should I do?
Oh, that sounds terrible. Thanks, Victoria. Don't you hate it when that happens? I think what you do is instead of letting him back upstairs, you go to his closet, you grab all his stuff, and you just throw it out the window. And I wouldn't just let it stay there. What I'd go out there is I'd go to the garage, maybe get some gasoline, and I'd take that gasoline and I'd douse all of his clothes, all of his belongings, and I'd set a huge bonfire on the front lawn. Maybe he'll figure and understand what you're trying to say. You get one more night.
One more night.
That's it. One more. Definitely gonna fall when you see that bonfire. Ah. All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Cassandra. Cassandra, welcome to Nightwind.
Thanks, Jack. How are you?
I'm great, and I really appreciate you calling.
Of course. Mine's a story of lost love, a lost connection.
Oh, no.
I met a guy at a gas station last weekend. We connected eyes, made eye contact.
Of course, yes.
I thought there was something there, and then he drove away.
Oh.
What do I do? How do I find him? How will I find this love?
Cassandra, thanks for calling. You know, gas is so cheap, it's bound to happen. I think what you want to do is get a friend at the FBI. And then go down there and see if you can run his plates. See if you can get a composite. Maybe see if you can get a screen. Maybe someone will draw his portrait. Stalk the area. Stay close to the gas station. Maybe misrepresent yourself. Tell everybody in the neighborhood you're police. Try to get to the bottom of who this guy is. And when you find him, never let him go. You know what? Maybe I'm not saying it right. You know who says it better? REO Speedwagon. It really gets to you, the feeling, doesn't it? I'm still afraid to let it flow. Like the gas. What started out as friendship has grown stronger. I only wish I had the strength to let it show. I tell myself that I can't hold out forever. I say there is no reason for my fear. I feel so secure when we're together. You give my life direction. You make everything so yeah, does, of course. I wish I had a nickel for every time I made eyes at a gas station. I feel your pain, Cassandra. Let's go to Gary. Gary, let's get some testosterone up in here. Gary, welcome to Nightwind.
Yes, my name is Gary. I'm a writer for a local zine.
Okay.
And the other night I was at an art show so beneath me with a group of people so beneath me that as I walked home, I felt lonely. Like I'd never find another person as good as I am. What can I do?
Great question, Gary. You sound really lonely. What I think you do is, I think that you make as much of a spectacle as you possibly can. When you're around people that you don't know, or maybe you just don't have something in common with, I think what you want to do is get their attention. So, singing out loud, or dancing by yourself to a beat that no one else can hear, or maybe furiously trying to pull your own hair out while you collect Aldi bags and other Aldi bags. That's what I would do. Because everybody loves someone who wants your attention. But you know what? Maybe I'm not saying it right. Maybe we should let Mr. Richie say it for us.
Hello. Is it me you're looking for?
The crazy guy in the corner.
I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in your smile.
Keep pulling that hair out.
You're all I've ever wanted. And my arms are open. You know just what to say, and you know
it's hard to fit in. It really is. Well, that's all the time we have for Nightwind tonight. I'm Folkman Jack, giving you the best relationship advice a light rock DJ can. Good night.
Sunlight in your
haven't heard that song in a long time. Wow, Folkman Jack, there you go. You just left the studio. 80s light rock relationship advice call-in, maybe the best radio format that has ever been invented. What do you think, Pete? Do you think Folkman Jack's got a chance?
Great advice.
He does, right?
Yeah,
and it's solid, relatable advice.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love about the 80s rock call-in, you know, just shows in general, is they always have the right advice.
Mm-hmm.
They really do.
Yeah, well, they know.
They just know, because they're late-night DJs.
DJs know.
DJs know. That's what they get. I mean, think about their life experience. I mean, gosh, they're so socialized.
Exactly.
And they like 80s light rock, and they know all about love. It's a pretty good combo. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Patty Vasquez is going to be doing her show live from Springfield. It's Character Flaws. Stay with us. All right, another Character Flaws in the books. I like it. Folkman Jack. We got to get him back. We got to keep doing. Wednesday nights at 10, we put all of our bits together, and it's one big bit off. I don't know if that's the right way to say that. Here, Wednesday nights at 10. Next Wednesday, oh, man, I'm trying to think. I've got so many great people that have already said, yes, I can't wait to do it. I want to come in. So we're going to have some great improvisers and performers, some top-notch people that are on Chicago stages coming in and participating in this radio show, which is great.
It's awesome.
Right? I mean, I feel like this is the perfect city to do this in. You know, to have a show that showcases sort of theater of the mind or improv or, mm-hmm. or that kind of stuff
right.
live. It's great. It's great. So we'll do it every Wednesday at 10 o'clock. Coming up, Patty Vasquez is in Springfield. State of the State Day. What a day to be in Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was planned,
right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
She was just down there and, oh, by the way.
No, it was planned. It's a long day, man. I was following her Facebook feed, and she had pictures of Rauner at the speech. So, I mean, she's been working it, you know, to be able to bring this to us tonight. So I'm excited to listen to her, and she broadcasts live from Springfield tonight. Patty Vasquez coming up here at 11 o'clock. Tomorrow night, we are on, but we're on twice. We're on in the 7 o'clock hour and the 10 o'clock hour because we kind of sandwiched the Northwestern game. And, you know, I figured out who Northwestern's playing. They're playing Michigan State. I think at Michigan State, but I could be wrong on that. But that's tough.
They have to win that one.
Right?
You got to win
something. You called it.
They got to beat a good team.
They got to get themselves in, like, the third or fourth slot in a sports center. And they're like, ooh, big news coming out of East Lansing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they need, yeah, that's, you're right. This is it. These are big games. They got Michigan State, and I guess they're done because they lost both games to Maryland, so they don't have to play Maryland again. But that's coming up. So they're playing tomorrow. So it's almost like the Download presents Michigan State versus Northwestern.
Oh.
That's the way to look at it.
All right, yeah.
So, like, the promo tomorrow should be like, coming up, you love college basketball? Well, I sit down with the Northwestern Wildcats as they play the Michigan State Spartans. Something like that. So that's coming up tomorrow. And then Friday we're back full. We've got some full shows because the Blackhawks are off for the All-Star game, the All-Star break.
Because we come back after the game tomorrow night and do another hour.
That's right. So we've got an hour. Oh, geez. Yeah. So we have 7 to 8
sandwich.
And 10 to 11. Then Friday, we got a full show, The Return of the Frying Pan.
Yes, it's been a while. It's too long.
It's been too long. And then Monday night, tune into WGN Radio because we're going to do Iowa caucuses. We've made that decision. We're going to do it. Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling are going to be here. We'll have Andre Darlis and the team all ready to go, giving you the everything you need from the ground in Iowa. And we'll get some people on the line to talk about the results. It's going to be a great show on Monday night. So all that coming up here on The Download.